Welcome, everyone, to episode 414 of Radio Free Nintendo. I'm your host, Jonathan Metz, and with me, as always, are Guillaume Bayette.
That's me.
And James Jones.
I also don't come with an AC adapter.
And shit. John Lindemann.
I am bigger and better, like the 3DS XL. New 3DS XL.
And I will track your face.
Yes.
Well, we might talk about 3DS XL later on, I suppose. We don't know what each other's predictions are, but that is the plan for the second half of this show.
Are we allowed to talk about it after last week, or do we have to have like a cool down period?
Well, you might.
Are we on like a temporary ceasefire?
Well, we're supposed maybe to talk about it and not shout about it.
Right. But anyway, yes, we will be getting into the. Everyone's favorite
not ours
feature later on. Not our favorite, but everyone else's favorite because it makes us look really
it's
stupid.
It's the least wonderful time of the
as
year.
As we will cover. We're bad at predictions. We've always been – I mean, we do hit a few. I don't want to say that we're like, you know, 0 for 100 because we have definitely hit a few. And over the years, there have been some good ones. But, you know, when you're kind of make them up on the spot and it's somewhat arbitrary, they are often pretty bad. So we'll recap last year's and set ourselves up for more humiliation through 2015 that everyone will remind us about every time something is proven to be exactly the opposite of what we predicted. and we are expecting to have a special guest for the prediction segment. I kind of want to keep it a secret until right before that moment. So,
it's Reggie.
Yeah, Reggie's going to give us the predictions because he don't know either.
Exactly.
It's just like, I don't know. Japan just calls me a week before. And
we got this game. It's got Mario in it.
It's all wishful thinking.
It's got puzzles and shit. I don't know. There's dragons involved. You sold Bigfoot Pizza. You can figure this out.
Sell it, Bigfoot Pizza Boy. Sell it.
It's almost as good as Reggie.
Run out there, large American. Yeah, run out there.
Yeah. We'll hear from our special guest later on. First up, we are going to do some new business. And John, I thought you could go first because you're playing something that I think a lot of our listeners will be excited to hear your thoughts on.
Yeah, I was. I through the kindness of one of my Twitter followers or followers of the podcast, I was able to get a Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate demo code for 3DS. I didn't get an email, ironically enough, with these codes that they've been handing out.
I didn't either.
I did.
Yeah.
Suck up.
Yeah, James did. Think about that. I mean.
Well, you know, it's got to just come down
to
how much
that demographic.
I'm going to go ahead and say, irony aside, it's got to come down to how much Club Nintendo points you registered because I'm already platinum for the year.
Yeah.
Oh, geez. Yeah. Maybe that is it.
Yep.
Which is funny, all things considered.
Yeah. Always James. Always funny. That guy, James Jones, funny guy. So Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate. Yeah. So. I mean, James and I actually had a chance to play. I played earlier just, you know, by myself and kind of ran through the first couple of monsters. The monsters in it are the Great Jaggy, which is kind of one of the lower level monsters, kind of one of the sort of the first missions that you always play in Monster Hunter games is against the Great Jaggy. And
is he almost like the big he's like the tutorial mascot, it seems like, because it seems like he gets talked about in every Monster Hunter game.
Yeah, he does. He's always there.
Well, actually, I want to say he wasn't in the 4 release, the original one of this, and it was like them putting him in you was part of like the, he's back, guys!
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah, but of course it only came out in Japan, so.
Yeah, I mean, I would have missed him if he wasn't there, but he is the beginner one. The intermediate one is Tetsukabra, which is kind of like a big stone monster, kind of like a hippo, I guess you could say. He's sort of modeled after. They're all usually modeled after some type of like animal that occurs in the real world, sort of thing. So he's sort of like a hippopotamus with two like big tusks in the front, but he's also sort of like made of molten rock, and you know he chases you down. He digs up huge rocks and throws them at you. And then the last one is Gor Magala, who is like this big black dragon.
Also, he is defeat.
Who kicks your ass, as James and I found out. So, yeah, he's really tough because, I mean, the first two of them, you know, they're fairly easy. Actually, I think the intermediate one is easier than like Tetsukabra is actually more – he's easier to defeat than the Great Jaggy just because Jaggy – he's the one that calls in other monsters to help him fight you, which is kind of, for a beginner, And this will be a good segue into sort of my issues with, again, a Monster Hunter. You know, these games are just not demoed well in any of these demos that they release. But it's kind of hard because you have to sort of manage all these extra monsters while you're trying to fight the main monster. And I think for somebody who was just starting to play the game, I mean, I've seen it a billion times, but I mean, for somebody just starting to play the game, it would be pretty confusing. Whereas the Tetsukabra, you're just fighting him. So you can concentrate on him and just whack away at him until he dies.
Right.
Well, it's not like this kind of enemy is only put in demos, because I rented Monster Hunter 3 on Wii, and I played the full game, and I remember I think the very first monster that I fought was a great Jaggy.
Yeah.
Because I can't say for sure, but I do remember that it was calling in other monsters a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it really frustrating.
Yep.
And I was trying to chase him from zone to zone, but I couldn't because all these other monsters he had called in were like getting in my way and distracting me.
Yeah.
And it made it, you know, pretty hard for me to stick with that game. I didn't play it that much.
Yeah.
That was part of it.
Yeah. And of course, at the same time, while you're trying to manage all these extra monsters that it keeps calling in, you're trying to learn how to shoot your gun or use your
bow.
How
do I reload cannons?
I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. You don't know what you're doing. So
I'm shooting the damn dinosaur with paintballs so I can figure out where he went.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. And this is kind of what James and I, you know, discussed last night, was that they throw so much stuff. I mean, what they do with these is this, they just take like a chunk of the game and just throw it out there. Like, there's really no tutorial. They actually do, like, you know, because they added the insect glaive, which is, James can maybe explain that a little bit, the insect glaive.
Maybe, sure. So I played one match with a listener, and then when John was around, I decided I was just going to pick classes that looked like there's no way in hell I could actually use them effectively. And so I went with one of the new classes, the insect glaive, and found that, yes, there is no way in hell I can use that effectively. Basically, it's a long staff that shoots out a thing called Kinsects that steals energy from enemies and powers you up, and also you can pogo vault on it. I don't know. It's
what?
It's, yeah, I mean, it's...
So it's like the DuckTales cane?
Yeah, but way less easy to execute. It's so hard to figure out how to use that thing. So it goes out, it steals energy, and it fills up a gauge, but with like a certain color depending on where on the monster you hit it. But it's hard to tell, A, what those gauges mean, B, what part of the monster is going to give you what, and then C, once you've got it, what does that mean?
Yeah. I mean, so when you choose it, right, they do have you run through a quick tutorial, isn't it? But it's just text-based, right?
It's just text. It's just this person talking in, like, crazy localization nonsense.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that's always missing in these is context. Okay, you have a sword or whatever, and you're supposed to kill this monster. But there's so much more to it than that. I mean, they don't tell you, like, what to do when the monster... Like, first off, they don't really explain to you why the monster has no health gauge. They don't explain to you what happens when the monster starts to limp around. They don't explain anything to you about trapping a monster. But they give you traps, but they don't give you the stuff that you need to tranquilize the monster to use the trap. So they give you, like, a whole bunch of shit. Like, you can open up your box at the start of the mission. There's a whole bunch of stuff in there. You have no idea really what any of it does beyond like the potions, because they're the only thing that really makes sense. There's like, you know, smoke bombs and this and that and the other, and there's traps and all kinds of stuff in there. But if you're a new player, you don't know what any of this stuff is used for.
Yeah, and I think that really speaks to the problem I have with Monster Hunter and a lot of games really, is that they don't really try to point to you to what things you really need to know early on. So they give you access to a bunch of systems and tools that you could use early in the game if you were an expert player and you know how to, you know what that stuff is for.
Mm-hmm.
But as a new player, I'm looking for, ease me into this. Tell me the bare essentials, the things I absolutely have to be able to do, and make it clear the things that I could do, but I really don't need to, and I can just ignore for now, and then I'll pick that up later once I feel more comfortable with it.
Yeah.
And I definitely had that experience every time I've tried to play Monster Hunter, is I get in there and I'm totally overloaded by all the options and all the different things, and the game doesn't make it easy to go out and just experiment with that stuff and figure out what it does, because the game doesn't actually communicate the effectiveness of pretty much anything that you do.
Yeah.
And so I don't even feel like I can go out and just experiment and learn for myself, which is kind of how you do things in, you know, for instance, Dark Souls.
Mm-hmm.
But that game's a lot better about actually indicating what's happening when you try something. If it doesn't work, you'll know. And if it works, great, you'll know. And in Monster Hunter, I can't even tell when I'm hitting the enemy with my sword half the time, much less,
yeah,
you know, when a tranquilizer is starting to take effect or something like that.
Yeah.
It just seems so easy to solve too, because like a million action game demos do this thing where, okay, like they put you against one monster and then, okay, well, like hit it with your sword a couple of times and now, okay, so it's going to attack you and then it pauses the action and like press dodge now, you know?
Yeah.
Like, it's very, very easy. It could just like walk you through the steps.
Exactly.
And yet Bayonetta does it.
Yep.
Both of the Bayonetta games do that. So, yeah. And I mean, the answer must be Capcom just doesn't care, because they've been getting this feedback from lots of people for years and years and years. And they still haven't really done anything about it. So they must just not care.
Yeah, apparently so.
So I mean,
because James was having that problem with the bow. I know that.
Yeah, so yeah, I had the bow, and the bow has an, when you're in aiming mode, it shows a line showing the arc of an arrow. But when you fire it, the arrow doesn't actually follow that arc. The arc's kind of a suggestion. So I'm having to aim over the arc. Well, because it's like a burst arrow, and it like separates mid-flight into a bunch of different smaller arrows, but they were all landing short of the monster. So then I had to re-aim and aim over the monster. And then I thought maybe I was hitting him. There was like a little splash on his body. But it wasn't until I was standing basically right next to him and shooting him in the face that I could see definitively, yes, I am hitting him. But the problem was, I'm now shooting him directly in the face as an archer. And I got hit one time by the middle boss and died. Because I had no health. I mean, I was just useless.
Yeah, and you were pulling aggro. How did you actually drop aggro when you actually tried to...
So anytime I pulled and drew on him, I drew aggro. I didn't have to fire yet. So basically he would turn around and shoot at a distance at me, and then I'd have to roll out of the way and lose my shot.
Yeah, because I'd be sitting there like hacking on him, because, you know, I use the great sword, which is just, I mean, you get right up in the monster's face and you're just hacking him with this gigantic sword, right? So, and James stays way back and he hits him with the bow. I mean, there were times when
which is what you're supposed to do.
Exactly. Yep. And I mean, but there were times where... Like, I mean, this boss would just be fighting me, and I mean, I'm hitting him right in the face, and he would just turn tail, and he would go straight towards James and, like, just plow James over.
It was bad. It was a bad scene.
Yeah.
So isn't the solution to this that James is supposed to, like, spread rotting meat on himself or something to mask his scent? I mean, Monster Hunter's full of that kind of stuff, isn't it? Like, you have to buy a vial of dino pee and then, like, you know, spill it over your head, and that way they can't smell when you're nearby or something like that.
You can sort of do that with certain things, kind of like... I'm not too sure. Like, I don't really need to do that. I mean, that kind of stuff, like, with my play style, I never need to really hide from anything, because my whole point is running right in and hitting something, right? So,
sure.
But I know James was kind of experimenting with, like, the different coatings on his shells, his bullets. Yeah,
which he does a bad job of explaining. It's like, hey, you can change coating. How? You press the L button. I press the L button. Nothing happens.
Now, was that with the gun lance?
So that was the coating was the bows. The gun lance was the shells. But the gun lance was the one that I couldn't figure out how to reload.
Well, yeah, and that's exactly it. They don't really tell you that you need to. It's not blatantly obvious that you need to take all of the shells out of the box at the start of the mission. So James, like, he pretty much ran out of ammo.
Right at the beginning.
But he didn't realize he had to take it all, and it doesn't really tell you what to take. It's just like, here's a bunch of shit in a box.
Reload.
Take whatever you want.
So I was just slapping things with my gun lance for the most of the demo. It was bad. It was a bad scene.
Yeah, I did the heavy lifting on that one, to say the least. But
we talked about how impenetrable this demo is for new players, and that's nothing new. And I know there are huge Monster Hunter fans who do listen to the show, and they're probably angry at us because we're being so negative about this right now. But we focused on James's experience and some of the rest of ours in the past. But John, as a seasoned Monster Hunter player, I'm curious how you think it stacks up to 3, which you played a ton of.
It plays a lot like 3. I mean, it's nothing. I mean, I could just pick it up and start playing it. It doesn't really play any differently. The wrinkles that they add in is the environments themselves. There's a lot more cliffs, a lot more stuff that you can climb up, which leads to more varied sort of gameplay.
I'm going to mount it.
Yeah, and I mean, you can mount monsters, but to me, it's... I don't know. I can't see myself. I don't know. I didn't really experiment with that very much.
I did it one time by accident.
You can hop on the back of the monster.
No, you hop on their back and you just beat the shit out of them while they're trying to throw you off.
Yeah.
Okay. So it's not like you're throwing a saddle on it and riding it around and like attacking other monsters with your monster.
No.
I'm going to ride the Gormagala around.
Yeah, that thing is that would be hard to mount. But yeah, it's kind of like it's a different way to attack, I guess, to kind of like just, you know, shake things up a little bit.
Yeah, the explanation is that you can break a body part if you fill up this gauge before it throws you off. And
okay.
I mean, I didn't notice that happen, although I filled the gauge. The Great Jaggy was still smacking us around when we were trying to hunt it down, so.
Yeah. Yeah.
So maybe like outside, like in the full game, maybe it's going to become less optional. Mm-hmm. I can imagine maybe like a couple of monsters that you absolutely have to mount and destroy some part of them before you can kill them.
No. Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. And definitely, I'm sure it would be kind of a key thing to do in group play when you have several players where like one person would say, all right, I'm going to mount this guy and do X to him while everybody else does something. I could see that like the more advanced encounters. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure they'll work it in somehow. It didn't. To me, I mean, the way I played the game, I mean, it didn't really affect the way I played. I mean, I was still able to kill monsters how I always did. I didn't try out the insect glaive just because I didn't really want to go through the hassle. I didn't feel like learning something new. I just like my great sword. I like to just hack away at stuff. I'm good at it. Yeah. I can dodge well.
Do you feel that the game looks different, sounds different, controls any different?
It doesn't control any different. I mean, it still controls well. Granted, I use the Circle Pad Pro on my 3DS,
okay.
So it controls well.
And of course, this will support the C-stick and all the extra shoulder buttons on the new 3DS XL.
Right.
Yep. Now, speaking of that, in terms of the way the game looks, I've seen some comparisons out there that they're claiming that that the textures look better on the new 3DS XL, which doesn't surprise me because there are some ugly ass textures in this game on 3DS, like just textures where like especially like on the ground and stuff where you just look at them and you're like, wow, that looks really bad. It looks, I don't know. I was expecting more of, for some reason, I was expecting more of a graphical upgrade for Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate, but so I wasn't terribly impressed by it. It looks the same as Monster Hunter 3 Ultimate. It's not like, but I'm hoping that it looks better or noticeably improved on the new 3DS XL. But I mean, it doesn't look worse, but.
It seems that a number of games could get frame rate boosts, for instance, from being played on the new system because it's just faster. Mm-hmm. You know, so if the engine is getting throttled on frame rate buffer, it makes sense that the engine could pretty easily be triggered to run more smoothly on the new system. Better textures seems like it would take a little more effort to like key that in and provide higher resolution content, you know.
Yeah.
So that's kind of interesting. That sounds like probably the developers at Capcom put a little more time into that version if it runs at better textures.
Yeah.
I guess.
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, it could just be BS and maybe the new 3DS XL screen just looks better, so the textures look better or something. But
could be.
I mean, I also don't think that the environments that they have, you know, in this were like that great to begin with. At least like the three environments that you fight through are all sort of like they're like just kind of generic mountains or this kind of like, you know, volcano-ish area. You know, they're not some of the pretty areas, more pretty areas of the game, you know, because you fight in all kinds
zones,
of like jungles and stuff like
are
that.
Are the zones any bigger than in 3?
No.
At least not that we observed. I mean,
yeah, not that we've seen.
That was something that kind of annoyed me in 3 because I remember playing it on the Wii and thinking, wow, this is a really beautiful game, but these environments are tiny. And
yeah,
right.
I'm constantly running from one to the next and having to look at these loading screens. And especially when you're chasing a monster or if you don't know where it is and you're tracking it, you might go from one zone to the next every few seconds and then you wait. And also it makes it more difficult to understand how the environment is laid out. I mean, you have a map there, but the map is, you know, all these chunks of areas that are connected by, you know, little dotted lines. It's not because the environments aren't continuous. It makes it more confusing to get around them and to remember where certain things are and how to get to them.
Yep.
And that would be a big improvement for me is if the series moved toward, you know, more continuous, larger environments that you could really kind of move around in more freely and hunt without having to constantly reset your bearings every time you go to a different zone.
Yeah.
They're trying way too hard to tell you about the combat, like trying to give you too much at one time. Mm-hmm. But you mentioned all this other stuff in the game. Like, I have no concept of this. Like speak to people who've played the demo and don't know Monster Hunter at all.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you don't know, if you haven't really played deep into a Monster Hunter game, there's a lot of other stuff. I mean, kind of the whole point of the game is, yes, killing monsters, but really, I mean, the whole feedback loop is like, you kill monsters to get better gear and materials to make better gear, and then you make that better gear, and your hunter looks really cool, and then you go out there and you kill, you know, stronger monsters. That's kind of the whole thing. And so what they don't really go into is...
I've never gotten into that loop.
Yeah.
Everybody says that's the fun part of the game. I've never gotten to it every time I've tried to play it.
That doesn't surprise me at all, because you kind of have to... You have to actually learn the core mechanics of the game, and these demos do a horrible job of teaching you the core mechanics of the game in any way, shape, or form. So you wouldn't even get to the point where you could reliably kill monsters and trap them to get the stuff that you need to make the armor. So it's, and to me, that's a huge part. And there's also like, there's farming as well, where you can make, you can farm different herbs and kind of stuff like that you also use. For example, for James was talking about his gun, you make shells out of certain things that you farm. And, you know, you can kind of, you have a little farm and your little feline cat guys, they help you with that. And, you know, you
can you do that in the demo?
No.
No. It's a huge system. It's a huge system in the game. Huge.
Well, I mean, that seems like a reasonable thing for the demo to leave out. I was just curious.
But to give some concept that it's there.
Like you don't even know it exists aside from these, like, you know, kind of nodes sprinkled throughout each area that you at least, I mean, it's funny because in earlier Monster Hunter games, these nodes would just be out there and you wouldn't even see like the A button pop up over them. Like when you walked over them, you wouldn't even know they were there if you didn't know to look for them visually. But now, I mean, they now show the little A button when you walk over like a mushroom or something like that. But
oh, that's good.
But I mean, you do that. I mean, they've done that for several games, but I mean, you do that and it's like, okay, I can gather this stuff, but what am I gathering and why am I gathering it? But they never tell you anything about that. You know, like that would be the perfect opportunity. Like what Guillaume said, just pop up some text that says, you have gathered some mushrooms. You use this for farming later on in the game to create X and Y.
But or, hey man, you just found some whatever. Let's go make something.
Yeah.
So like the idea, or I don't know if it's really like something that they set out to do, or if it's just like the aftermath of the fact that they don't have good tutorials. But the idea is that like experienced players are going to teach newbies how to play. But this game doesn't have voice chat, right?
No.
No.
Well, it has Skype.
Skype. Well, let's talk about the online kind of group.
The interface.
The interface is it's tough to deal
hasty
with.
Hasty is the word. I was the word I would describe for the online. It was hasty. It was hastily designed.
Put together. Yeah, I mean it's really weird. It's goofy because if you're the host of a room, you create a room, and the room has this ID that is
it's your genetic code basically.
Pretty much, it's like, I swear to God, it's like 12567834561257, and you have to like give that to somebody for them to come into your room.
Have it, bro.
Yeah,
you have to.
Well, you can see it in a list, but the thing is, there's nothing indicating that your friend is the one that's hosting that room.
Oh, so they don't put any names on the lobby.
So nope. I'm hoping in the retail version that's not the case, but
yeah,
in the demo that's definitely the case. So John and I had a little bit of an adventure just trying to get into a room together.
Mm-hmm.
And if he didn't put a password on, the room got swamped.
Yeah.
And if he did put a password on, I had a hard time finding the room.
Yes.
Holy crap.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, when I'm sitting there,
Battle.net did this better in the 90s.
Yeah, and so you're sitting there, and so even when you're hosting a room, when James comes in, bear in mind that James, this is what we couldn't understand, is that James is on my 3DS friends list.
Right.
I mean, I can go to my list of friends, and I can see whether he's online or offline, but...
You can see what game he's playing.
Yeah, and this game is completely, I mean, at least, well, not maybe not the retail version, but... This one is, it was completely unaware of that. So I'm hosting the room and I just see guest pop in. I don't really know if that's James or not. It just says guest. And actually on James's side.
Yes.
I'm hosting the room and it lists me as a guest.
Yeah. Oh. He's got the so host like, icon with the name guest. I was losing it.
Everyone's a guest host.
I'm like, okay. Yeah. So and then also like when you actually do
that's
finish gotta
the quest, be better in the full version. That's got
yeah. It has to be. It has to be. But I mean, but this is the kind of stuff that you run into that just turns you off to the game. I mean,
so like the you, only way that you even knew who you were playing against was that you were talking to each other on Skype or
yeah
what?
Yeah. Yeah. And texting it. I mean, I was texting him the idea of the room.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, and I mean, when you complete the quest and you kill the monster and everything, you it asks you. So you back out. It says quest complete, and it says, do you want to go to the eShop?
Yeah.
I'm assuming it takes you to the Monster Hunter page. If it's a Monster Hunter 4 page, I guess. If you select no, it then says, do you want to? I think it asks you if you want to go change.
Do you want to change your difficulty? Yes.
Yeah. And really, whether or not you choose yes or no there, it takes you all the way back to the main screen, and then you have to set up your room again and go through the process of setting up another room with a different ID. So, yeah, it's good stuff.
If you say yes, you actually get taken back before the splash screen. If you say no, you're yes. just taken back to the splash screen.
Yeah. It's, oh, my God. It's wow. just this demo. The more I played it, I was like, Capcom, what are you doing with this demo?
But I could swear, like on Twitter, I read someone say, at last Capcom makes a good demo for Monster Hunter. Like, what were they talking about? Is there anything
there is one thing about the demo that they made that they did a really good job on. And that's the button to refresh the list of rooms. Because the text to refresh the list is the icon for the Y button and the word retry. Not refresh. Retry.
Yeah, okay. It's just stuff like that. I mean, I'm not slamming the game at all. I mean, if you like Monster Hunter, you're gonna love Monster Hunter 4 Ultimate.
It's just a bad demo.
Guaranteed. It just amazes me time after time, Monster Hunter game after Monster Hunter game, they just throw these demos out there that just do not demonstrate the game off at all. They don't give you a context for anything that you're doing.
And in some cases the ways the demo doesn't work are just baffling. You're just like, how did you screw that up?
In a lot of ways, it's really doing the opposite of what a demo should do, which is pull you in and make you want to buy the full version.
Right.
But you have to have a better experience than this. I mean,
yep.
Okay. Well, we've spent a lot of time on that, but I'm sure, I mean, it is relevant. It's a big upcoming game. And, I mean, I had a lot of people, you know, offering codes the last couple of days, and I'm just like, there's no way in hell I'm going to play that.
Yeah.
So it's like, no, you, James, you take it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's your turn, buddy.
You'll hear more from me on Monster
I've been
Hunter.
Around this loop before, and it's not good. It's not good, and it's not for me.
I had an insect glaive. I was shooting bugs at things, and I mean...
That sounds like it should be fun.
It was weird.
Yeah.
It was weird. That's
it
the
is.
Best
right. It's fun with the proper coaching.
Hmm. Sure. But John, you are going to buy the full version, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, well, we'll get some more... positive expert insight from you when that happens. But for now, let's move on and hear about what Guillaume has been playing.
Sure. Well, I'm always on the lookout for new co-op games on the Wii U because that's mostly what we play over here. Karen and I, we don't really like to compete. This big eShop co-op game came out, Chariot. And I had been waiting for it for a long time because it's just looking at the screenshots, you could see like it's really, really pretty and like the trailer made it seem fun. I'm not really usually into physics based platformers, but this one, it just seemed a ton of fun. And it really is. Like, there is kind of traces of Yumi's Odd Odyssey in this, and that, you know, you've got a rope, you're tethered to it.
Oh, boy, and, my favorite.
Yeah, I know, except it's much more manageable, it's much friendlier.
Okay.
But the twist, and also you're not shooting a hook anywhere. It's more like you're climbing, you're platforming, and you're using... this chariot that you're lugging around as a platform, and then you pull it up after you. So it's more of a traditional 2D platform that you're mostly like jumping on platforms and then pulling this rope. And when you're playing co-op, you've got someone else at the other end of a rope at the other end of the chariot. So you guys are just like collaborating together to make your way up through these caves and try to collect loot. And it's one of the most cooperative co-op games that I've had to play. You know, like in some games that have a co-op mode, like Guacamelee and stuff like that, sure, you're playing together, but you're mostly doing your own thing and hoping that the other person is also doing their own thing well enough that both of you can move on to the next scene, right? Like, I mean, Guacamelee, I guess maybe you can set up combos together. Like, you can be, like, throwing enemies at each other and stuff like that. But most of the time, you're going to be okay if, like, one of you tackles one guy and the other person tackles someone else. And, like, if neither of you dies, you're going to be fine. In this game, though, it's just, like, you constantly have to make sure that, okay, so I'm going to jump first and I'm going to pull you after me. And then, you know, and then we're going to see what we're going to do from there. And so, yeah, like constantly you're kind of talking through the game, talking through the experience and just, you know, trying not to screw the other person up. And, you know, I was going to say, like, at first when I started describing the game, like I hesitated saying like, oh, we don't like competition. I almost said we don't like arguing. But the thing is, you're playing this game. And there's going to be some tense moments, you know, because like you're just like hanging to like the chariot and you're on this tiny platform and you're anchoring yourself to the ground by pressing down. And you're just like, OK, now you jump over there. And like the other person, like, I'm trying, you know, it's just, you know, in these physics based games, it's a little bit harder than it seems. And also like when you've got two people tugging on this chariot and kind of like sometimes screwing the other person inadvertently and being like,
I think it shows you the difference between a game like Guacamelee, to use your example, that allows and encourages cooperation versus a game like Chariot that requires cooperation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that can go either way, you know.
Yeah, but so far, like, this is kind of I'm not going to say it's easy, because it's not. Like, we've definitely been struggling, like, figuring out some of the puzzles, and there are some areas I don't think that we can reach yet. You do, the loot that you find, you can use to buy these accessories, and so far they haven't been available to us. Like, there's only one, like, a peg that you can, you know, stick in the ground and tether the chariot to that, but other than that, like, so far, we haven't really found anything, but still, the controls are pretty simple in a way, but because there's so much to think about and another person to think about, it can be a little bit, unwieldy, or just like in like the heat of the moment, like you might forget that, okay, L pulls on the rope and ZL, gives some slack, and like you might make a mistake and, so that's one of the things that we've been struggling with, you know, and sometimes like the in-game tutorials are not really well illustrated. You'll have these signs in the background of the cave that say like, that just show basically, you know, the commands that you're supposed to do. Like it shows the person kind of, squatting and holding onto the ground, and it shows like the L button and down, and you're like, okay, so I guess that anchoring yourself to the ground is down an L, but no, L is for another thing entirely, and it's just like, just press down. So that doesn't help things.
Maybe it means the left stick.
No, it's just like, because in that particular place, you were supposed to have like one person go in like on one side, on the left side, and be pretty high up, and the other person be pretty high up on another platform on the right side. Then you both tug on your ropes. You make them as tight as possible, and the chariot is going to be close enough to like this gem to like draw it in and pick it up. So yeah, I don't know, like just some sticking points there in the beginning when you're still learning the game.
Do you think it would be physically possible for one person to play this on two controllers at the same time?
No, because okay. You need the...
So you can't brothers it.
No, yeah, you need really fingers on basically three of the shoulder buttons. And okay. A thumb, you know, on the control stick, and another one on the face buttons. Yeah. So very cool. Like, it's just like about like one person climbing up on the chariot and then pulling it in, and like the other person kind of swinging left and right at the end of the rope. And it's very clever. It's very pretty. The music is great. And there have been some issues with some eShop games lately. Like, some indie games have been really struggling. There's Citizens of Earth that is really buggy, apparently. And there's 1001 Spikes, which will never be patched, apparently, and has huge problems. But this game
I want to play 1001 Spikes. I guess I'm going to have to buy it on PS4
right.
or Vita, because I would love to play it on the Wii U and get it on the gamepad and everything. I don't even remember if they ever added the gamepad display.
No, support. They didn't.
Like, they were going to in the first patch, and then it didn't sell enough for them. And there's also like actual bugs in the game. Yeah. And they said, well, we know about them. We're going to fix them in that patch. And then Nicholas came back and said, oh, well, the game didn't sell enough for us to make the patch, so we're not going
to
make
it. Yeah, well, guess what? Like, the game was really hard to recommend because it was buggy. You know, it was really buggy.
Well, I mean,
really,
I think your answer then is retroactively, no, we can't recommend you buy that game. I mean,
yeah, of course. I mean, exactly. That's breaking a contract with your customer there.
Yep,
you know, when you don't do your job right the first time, you say you're going to fix it on good faith.
Do you want to be Sega? Do you want to be Sega? No, you don't want to be Sega. Well, don't be Sega.
Yeah. So that's really shitty. And, you know, I know patches cost money to make, but games cost money to buy. And some people bought your game and it's broken. So fix it.
Right.
That's on you. That's not on the customers to buy more copies of the game. It's on you to release your game properly, or at least fix it after.
Has anybody on the site reached out to Atlas about Citizens Earth and just said, like, hey, what's up?
I'm sure something is coming. Like, okay. Atlas is a good company. And I'm not saying Nicholas is a – well,
yeah, I'd be maybe surprised. I'm sure Atlas will fix it. I'm sure that they will.
I hope so.
I would be really shocked. I was shocked by Nicholas because I know Tyrone. He runs that company. He's a really good guy. I have not spoken to him specifically about this. I'm sure it's a sore topic, but I think it's super shitty.
Yeah, yeah.
This game is really
like a really, really good, you know, like good production values and
Chariot.
You mean Chariot?
Okay. Yeah. We just talked about like two or three
AC adapters are really good value.
Yeah.
It's a good co-op game. Just be aware of what you're getting into. Try to be patient because you're gonna screw each other sometimes, not, you know, unwillingly, and it can get tense.
Okay, that sounds pretty cool. All right, well, I will speak briefly about Captain Toad Treasure Tracker because I finished that game the other day, or at least I finished episode 3. So right. I beat the main part of the game.
Did you find all the gems and stuff like that?
No.
Oh, really?
No. No, I might go back and hack away at that stuff over time. I think the quality of the gem placement varies a lot from stage to stage.
Yeah.
And there's some stages where I feel like it's almost impossible that you'd be able to get them all on your first try. Which is really the ideal. I mean, I feel like when you play through a stage, even if you don't get them all in the first pass, you should be like, oh, well, that was really my fault. I should have been a little more observant or a little more careful or whatever. And Captain Toad, I think, breaks that trust every now and then by putting something in a place that it's really just not likely that you would come across it because of the way the stage is laid out or the way that something is chasing you. And you would have to know to wait for it to go past or something like that in order to go get a gem. So that kind of irritated me a little bit. I mean, I certainly did get all of them on certain stages. And maybe I would go back to it. I had enough to unlock 3 or 4 bonus levels in the bonus content area after I beat the game. That stuff, I'm not so crazy about it. Like, it sounds like it should be fun to play through 3D world levels as Captain Toad. But really what it makes you realize is just how slow and weak Captain Toad is. When you put him in the level from another game where you're used to being able to run around as like Cat Mario and, you know, do all this crazy stuff and wall jump and you run really fast and you can defeat enemies and you pick up fireballs, and Captain Toad can't do any of that stuff. Mm-hmm. And he walks really slowly. So these levels feel gigantic, and it really feels kind of like a slog to get through them when you're playing as Captain Toad. So those levels were kind of a disappointment for me. It seemed like a cool idea, but I just don't really think it's that much fun in execution. And then the other bonus levels seem mostly like kind of mini game stuff. You know, it's like, here's a level where you kind of have to keep moving forward because these dudes are chasing you. But it's just right. The same level you've played before, except yeah. Now you essentially have a timer, which is really kind of the antithesis of what Captain Toad is all about, which is that there is no timer. You can take as much time as you want. You can relax. You can explore. You can try a lot of different things. There really aren't very many consequences in Captain Toad.
Yeah, there's another...
putting that panic kind of layer on top of that stuff, I don't really think adds anything good to it.
Right, and there's this other type of extra stage where you're finding the other members of the Toad Brigade, and it turns it into kind of a Mario versus Donkey Kong kind of thing, where you're trying to find all these crew members and then reach the exit. But once again, it's a level that you've played before. Like the very first level of the game, you have to play it again that mode. And that's just like, oh, really? You know?
It feels like they're just recycling content. Yeah. I mean, that is it's a good enough twist on the gameplay that it could be really, and it plays on, it's similar to the double cherry item, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's neat to control all these characters together, because you kind of have to do these group dynamics where sometimes you just sort of walk in a circle just to collect everybody in one small area before you kind of move on. Onto a moving platform or something. I mean, it you're kind of herding cats at that point. But, I mean, it's different, and it can be fun. But I feel like that stuff would have worked better if they'd made new levels that really took advantage of it rather than recycle old ones. Yeah. So, you know, in terms of, like, the longevity of the game or the replayability, I mean, they certainly put a lot of things in there to try to get you to play more of it. It's just... almost all of the sort of extendable or bonus content type things they have in the game, I don't really think they're that much fun. So
yeah,
I feel like I could go back through and do all that stuff, but it would probably feel like a slog and I wouldn't enjoy myself. And it would hurt my really very positive impression of the game. I mean, it did make my top five last week, and having finished it now, it still wouldn't. I don't think it's an amazing game. I don't think it's the most memorable Nintendo game.
Right.
But I do like that it does things differently. It is kind of a new formula for Nintendo. It's them trying out some new ideas. And really the highest point of praise I can give it is that every single level, I think there are 70-ish in total. The third chapter is longer than I think the first two combined. So it might seem like you're chewing through the game really fast when you're in chapter or episode 1 and 2, but the third episode just goes on forever. There's like 40 stages in it or something like that. And every single one of those levels is different. They really don't repeat ideas from one level to the next. And I was surprised that even in the very last, you know, 5 or 10 levels of the game, they're still throwing out things that I had not seen before. And they didn't feel like just escalations of ideas from earlier, which you might expect in a Mario game. They felt like just new ideas. There's just, here's a new gameplay mechanic that we threw in right at the very end. And you might only use it one time. There's a level that's basically pachinko or pinball, where you're using cannons to launch Captain Toad up to the top of this ramp. And then you slide down the ramp, and you can either drop into cutout holes that are in the ramp, or you're steering yourself to run into enemies and kill them and pick up coins. And basically you just have to, you know, and I don't even, there's almost no way to die in that level. I think there's a thwomp enemy down below that can kill you, but, it's really just kind of, it feels like a bonus level, except it's just a normal level. And I think the game works best when it really plays with your expectations in that way. And it throws things at you that you really weren't quite expecting it, including, I mean, there are certain levels that looking at them on the stage select screen, I thought, man, this doesn't seem like it's going to be fun. You know, like a ghost house level where there's poison stuff coming up from below and you're being chased by booze, you know, I mean, there's just certain kinds
often
of levels
chased by
that,
booze.
Yeah, I don't really like when the game introduces booze, because your movement is already so restricted that when they start taking away your ability to turn backwards or go around corners, it starts to feel like almost linear.
That's what booze does, yeah.
They're herding you down a very narrow path, and I don't care for that feeling in the game. But there are a lot of times levels that just seemed like it might be kind of annoying or overly stressful, and then I would get into them and it would actually be super fun. There's a level where you find a charging chuck right at the beginning of the level, and the best way to play that level is to try to keep him with you throughout the whole thing. So he's always trying to kill you. But if you just dodge him really carefully, you can actually bring him along all the way to the end of the level. And if you do, you're rewarded for it, because he can kill enemies for you along the way that you cannot kill yourself. You just have to be careful to keep dodging him every time he charges at you. So there's a lot of really clever things that the game does with, you know, these elements from classic Mario games. And I really appreciate that. But on the other hand, there's something to be said for the kind of sense of progression you get in a Super Mario game. You know, I mean, there's a structure to it. You're going through these worlds. There's a fortress, and then there's a castle at the end, and there's going to be a boss. And Captain Toad doesn't have any of that stuff. No. So, for instance, the last level of the game really doesn't play that much differently than some of the earlier levels in the game. And even, you know, like the next to last level could have been the third level in the game. You know, it's maybe a little bit harder, but it just, the game doesn't build on itself, which is both its strength and its weakness, if that makes any sense. It really does feel like just kind of a pile of levels, and they're not really organized in any way. And that is a strange feeling, because Nintendo games are usually so carefully, you know, arranged to give you a sense of progression, to teach you things, etc. And there's not really that much to teach you in Captain Toad, because your character can't really do anything. So it's more about you just kind of reacting to the level as it's presented. Is you jump in not knowing really anything about the level, and you just have to figure it out as you go. And it's refreshing, but it's a little bit frustrating too, because at the end of the game, I don't really feel like I played the end of the game. I just feel like it just ended. Like that review. So
there we go. Well played.
Yeah, I'm not even sure I really saw kind of the wealth of new ideas in Captain Toad. I feel like I've seen it all before, but I did also kind of feel that same feeling, even though it's not what really struck me the most about this game. I don't know. It's strange because it's so well done, and at the same time, I was very disappointed. You know.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I have a few other, you know, minor complaints about the camera control, for instance, and I think throwing the turnips in the game is terrible, because you throw in 3D, but you never have really a good angle on where you're throwing a lot, and a lot of times the camera's really zoomed out. And so if there's a diamond that you're trying to throw a turnip at to collect it, or if there's an enemy that's in your way and you're trying to throw something and kill the enemy, at least 50% of the time I would just miss, because Toad just wasn't pointing at it straight and I couldn't tell. And that's so un-Nintendo.
Yeah, but the easier solution would be to manipulate the camera so that the whatever you're aiming at is at a cardinal angle. It's harder to do with the enemies, but with I think it works well with the gems.
Sometimes it also depends on if there's something chasing you or... You know,
yeah,
some...
yeah. You don't always have the luxury of being able to get the camera just right. That's for sure.
Exactly. So anytime you miss with a turnip, it's like the worst feeling, and it feels like it should have been avoidable. Like I didn't really feel it was my fault when it happened. So that was kind of irritating. But there's a lot to like in the game. I do think it's a pretty good value, especially if you're the type of person to really kind of go perfectionist on it. I'm not. I'm probably done with it. But I'm happy I played it. I think I got what I wanted out of it. So let's finish up this segment with James.
Sure. So I've spent the last few weeks just trying to get enough into Persona Q that we could talk about it for Game of the Year. Ultimately, I didn't, which in the end was not a big deal, because now I'm about, I'll say 10-ish hours in. And for me, it wouldn't have made that top five anyway. That's not to say it's not a good game. It's just do it for me. So I have kind of a checkered history with the Etrian series. I can always kind of look at them and say, yeah, that seems like it works. And I can always kind of make the effort to get into them, to do what they're asking me to do. But I always feel like it takes me so long to even get through like the first dungeon that it just feels like an incredible drag. Because what these games do, and if you've totally out of the loop on the Etrian series, which don't worry, Atlas will make sure you're not because I've got like 36 coming out this year. The basic idea is you have a party of characters and you go into this unmapped maze of a dungeon and you proceed all the way through and you have to map it yourself as you go and you can get a little bit deeper each time, hopefully, or you can find shortcuts to cut out parts of the path so you can get a little bit deeper. And your goal is basically just to advance a floor and then come back out and then go back into that floor you just advanced to. The thing about this game, more so than even EO4, it feels like that first introductory dungeon in this game is enormous. Like it's so I spent probably 7+ hours in the first dungeon and just not feeling like I was getting anywhere. So this is not your introduction to Etrian Odyssey that I was expecting. This is not like, yeah, we're gonna ease you into this game. This is we're gonna get going right away and you need to just catch up. This is all you got.
But you have played an Etrian Odyssey game before.
Yeah. Well, I get that, but and they never clicked with me, and I was wondering maybe one that is trying to potentially broaden the horizons of the series, it might click a little easier. They might make the effort to kind of grease the wheel enough that it kind of sits into place and I can sort of get into it. But what I feel like instead is it's just this really, really slow, like methodical, okay, I've gained a little bit on this strip. Let's go all the way back out, save, sell my crap, heal, go all the way back in and try to get just a little bit farther this time. And while there is certainly some reward in that, you know, I'm getting a little bit further in the dungeon each time. It's just, it's so slow in paying you off for your work. It feels like it takes a tremendous amount of effort to get to the reward. And what I found in this game that is kind of maybe the problem for me is that you get, at least in this dungeon, you get so little money and it costs so much money to get yourself prepared to go back in that I never feel like I can afford to take any risks. I have to constantly drop back out of the dungeon because, all right, I'm down to just enough money probably. You know, I go in and I've spent all my money because I had to heal. I had to buy the item to exit the dungeon. I had to try to upgrade some equipment. And then I'm just trying to get enough money that I can get back out and heal again. It feels like I'm having a hard time to use a business term, turning a profit. Like I'm constantly in the red.
But are you, I don't know, like, did you choose your party already and are you switching between characters a lot?
I was switching between characters, but ultimately I found like that was just not getting me anywhere.
No. Like maybe because I really played the Etrian Odyssey 4, but in that game, like you kind of choose your character classes and I just stuck with the characters that I made the whole way through. And in this game, like you've got like the characters are more like they have personalities and they're more, you know,
they're specialized too. I mean,
yeah, and they're more defined than a character in Etrian Odyssey. So it might be tempting to switch between them according to the situation. But I thought my instinct was like, well, maybe I shouldn't do that because I'm going to regret it because I'm going to spread myself too thin and no one's going to be leveling up fast enough.
Well,
you know?
except for your leader who will be like 6 levels over everybody else. And I feel like that was what I was trying to do because I was approaching it from the other half of the equation here, the persona side, where it's important to have your characters at least not necessarily lockstep, but close enough that if you need them for something, and you might need them for something, that you could pull them along real fast and catch them up.
Right. I think that your money problems will disappear once you stick with the same people.
Well, I have been for a while, but the money, it's still just not enough money to really feel like, oh, I can just splurge on items and go as deep as I freaking want. It's always like, okay, I've got enough to maybe recover if there's a disaster and get the F out, but that's it. So
James, how is the persona part of the game working?
The persona part of the game, it's most of it is styling. It's characters, it's storytelling, it's music, it's artwork, it's design.
Right.
The battle system is a little bit of influence there, but no, it's different.
I would say there's a lot.
I disagree. I mean, it's it takes away a lot of the tactical stuff that you get out of the Persona battle system. Like you, like the idea that basically in a Persona battle system, if you hit something with the right elemental, you're always going to knock it down. And that's a big part of the strategy in stretching out how deep you can go into the dungeon. Because ultimately, the Persona games really ask you to go pretty deep into a dungeon every time you go through. And that's one way to do it, is to make sure that you're always neutralizing enemies as a threat and then just sort of pounding on them until you can get rid of them. Whereas this game, you may knock them down. It's a pretty low chance to do it from what I've seen. And the way it normally with the games, Persona games reward you by knocking everybody down, and then you get to use this kind of group attack. And this one, it's more based around who used the right elements and did enough characters use it. It just feels like, it feels like the game is forcing you to take more damage. To me, when I played a Persona game, the right party for the scenario and then the right strategy for managing the flow of battle, to me, is what makes that battle system work. It's not the names they use for elemental attacks or the, or like the merging of skills to make like, this is the perfect persona for this room. It was really just flow of control management. And this game doesn't give you that the same way.
Yeah, no, that's true. But I do think that the game manages to do something that's like both a combination of the Persona and Etrian Odyssey systems, and also something that's new. Because, yeah, okay, so you use the right elements against the right monsters. It doesn't knock them down, but it will make it so that your next special attack for that character is going to be free. You're not going to spend mana points.
Right.
Right. And a big part of the game is that your pool of mana for each character is very, very limited.
Oh, God, it's
limited. And so, yeah, it really is. And the trick is to really, like, maximize the use, like, trying to use the right elements against the right monsters. And so, like, the next attack is going to be free. And so you can do a lot of clever things like, okay, well, I'm going to have my healer use a low, not very costly spell against this enemy. And then I'm going to cast, like, the healing spell that costs way more than it should.
And that may start to click later in the game. But early on, like, I only have one healing spell. It's not very effective.
Right.
So it's, you know, I've got all the elements covered, so no matter what I run into. But the other thing that's super limited in this game is your health. Like, I feel like the health in this game is very, very low. I've running into this stag beetle that spawns every, you know, it's a pretty rare enemy, but I've hit it a couple times, and it almost one hit kills everybody. Anybody in the front line is going to get any attacks twice per turn. Well, in a normal Persona game, I have a mechanism for dealing with that. I put him on the ground and I just beat the crap out of him. But this one, I'm having to juggle this. It just feels like the combat system is pretty high stakes for every encounter. Like every encounter feels like, okay, I gotta fucking do this right.
Some people love when RPGs are set up that way, but it can also feel really like a grind.
It
can feel overly stressful when every single battle you run into is really.
That's
kind of
how I feel right now. It's like I'm just trying to get deeper into the dungeon so I can go forward. And there's this constant, like, if I fuck up, I'm going to get shot all the way back out. I'm going to lose all the experience and money I gathered. I get to keep the map, thank God. If you didn't let you keep the map, that would be criminal. But it's just, okay, I've got to just climb back through. And then you have to walk all that space again, knowing you're going to randomly generate more battles and just re-go through that. It's not that I think the game is bad, obviously. I think the game has real quality to it. It's so stressful playing it. I just don't feel like I'm able to just sit there and just relax playing it. So when that's kind of what I enjoyed about the Persona games. I could kind of half brain off for a lot of the game and just go and just do stuff.
Yeah, and especially they're really long games, so that's what you want to do with that game. You want
and this
have
game,
kind of
I mean, this game is apparently really long.
Yeah.
So it's,
wait, you're telling me a game that combines Persona and Etrian Odyssey is really long?
Well, no, it's not only that. There's like, I guess there's two modes of this game too.
Modes.
Yeah. Well, there's the two different groups.
Persona 3 and 4.
Yeah, but that only determines your starting group. And then, anyway, spoilers, you're going to meet up with the other group.
It's on the back of the box.
But have you at least got to the point where you get a secondary persona for every character?
Yeah, I have gotten that.
Okay.
It just, it,
so a big I, part of what's new to this game from the that's not an Etrian Odyssey anyway, is the whole like persona fusion thing where you're trying to create more and more powerful personas with the abilities that you need. And that's one thing that I'm struggling with, because I am not, you know, I don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of the different demons that exist in the SMT universe. So it's like, well, I don't know what I'm doing when I'm combining them. But ultimately, like, you want to bring the skills that you need. And like the Stag Beetle, for instance, at some point you're going to get a persona that can neutralize that. Like, you're going to get a spell that binds the beetle's agility, and then you're going to have a much easier time against it.
It's
yeah, but will you know it when you get it?
Right.
That's how I feel about Persona 4. I feel like I'm sort of randomly combining things, because it's.
I mean, early on, you probably are. You probably are. But in this game, so the fusion system in this one. So I've had some bad luck in terms of what persona I get. I've got some real garbage. Like, I got rid of a pixie, and then immediately the next one I got was another pixie. I'm like, great, useless garbage everywhere, useless fucking garbage. But what it does differently is it basically gives you preset recipes. Like, hey, you can make this one if you combine these two. You have, and it didn't feel like I had a lot of info to go on when I was doing it. Versus in the mainline games, where I could sit there and I could say, okay, I can take this one, and this one. Oh, I get that, but maybe I can trade in this cheaper one that's less valuable to me, and I get the same thing. Stats are different, but that matters to me more, that I keep the one I had, or I can go save it and get it back. But again, that costs money, and money is super tight in this game so far. So it feels like they watered down some elements of the persona stuff that I actually really enjoyed. And they add a little extra EO to the stock. Let's put it that way.
It
up.
I'm really surprised, because I'm not having the same problems, and like you're the systems like RPG guy, and I'm just like doing, oh, okay, whatever. I'm gonna combine this and this, and
I'm confident that James will stick with it, and maybe it'll click later, because that we've seen that happen to you a few times, I certainly hope that you do start to enjoy it more. But for now, we are going to wrap up this segment. And I know we've been fairly critical about all the games we talked about in this segment. It's just
everything
coming after
sucks.
Well, no, it's not that it sucks, but we found things to criticize, and that may be a little start coming off of the top five segment that we did last week. We're, you know, pretty happy with everything that we talked about, obviously. But I suspect that there will be some completely unwarranted and ridiculous optimism coming up in the next segment, because we are going to do our 2015 predictions feature, and we're going to bring in our special guest. He is waiting in the wings. So we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will be predicting the future.
Now playing a sampling of the best new original content at NintendoWorldReport.com. Hey, John.
Hey, James.
I'm already off the script.
You don't say. Well, at least this week you were completely, you know, forthcoming about it. You didn't even try.
Well, I'm trying something different today.
All right.
So, I've been thinking. The last 2 weeks, we spent a lot of time recording RFN. I mean,
fair enough. Yep.
Two weeks ago was really long, and then this week was pretty lengthy recording session.
Yep.
And Guy spends a long time editing him, and sometimes I spend a long time editing him. Sometimes Johnny does. You escape this somehow.
Thank God.
And we spend time, you know, prepping and emails, and I spend time not reading them.
Mm-hmm.
And our listeners spend a long time listening to the show.
This is very true.
Especially this segment. And I was thinking, this segment's really what you're here for, right?
I didn't want to say it, but I think that's what everybody's thinking.
So go ahead and tell us on the RFN Twitter, which is just RFN Podcast, if this is really RFN, and everything else is the bonus segments.
Be honest.
Yeah, I mean, those guys can take it. They're adults.
Yeah.
Let's get down to what's new on NintendoWorldReport.com. And every week I'm going to learn to say that faster and faster until it's just First up this week on NintendoReport, we have a hands-on preview of Majora's Mask 3D on 3DS by Aaron Kaluska. Aaron takes the time to regale us with his tale of life in Termina. Find out what he thinks of the streamlined gameplay, updated graphics, and find out if it is, indeed, a Majora improvement.
That's not mine. Blame Aaron for that one.
I do. Believe me. Speaking of blame that needs to be assigned, we have a review for the Wii U, not from Nintendo, for Citizens of Earth. The review, not the game, is by Kim Keller. Every once in a while, NWR likes to give a public service announcement. In this case, it's Kim telling you to hold off on buying this game until they fix the widespread crashes. You can check out the semi-review, but keep your wallet in your pocket or buy, say, maybe an Ogre Battle game.
No coincidence that that's your recommendation, right?
I always. You tell me you've bought them both, I tell you buy them again. Basically, I'm Nintendo.
That's terrible financial advice, James.
It's the Nintendo financial plan.
It's terrible. All right, and we have a hands-on preview of Ace Combat Assault Horizon Legacy Plus.
That is not entirely a short name.
That's on 3DS, and the review is the hands-on preview. My bad. It's by Aaron Kaluska. When I think of Ace Combat, I think of James Jones. And one thing that James Jones likes are remakes of remakes. And he also likes Nintendo character paint jobs. Therefore, this game is James Jones approved.
I haven't put my name on it yet, but...
As it's an update to an Ace Combat game that was a remake of an Ace Combat game. God bless America.
God bless Japan. Namco's got the Capcom franchise down here. It is an update to the 3DS game that came out like 2 years ago. It's full price.
Unnecessary all around.
Just Namco, you just...
Yeah.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. And we also have a review of Afterburner 2 3DS by Ryan Grove. If you want to find out what games I was playing in my post-college days, now's your chance. You'll never know what you're doing or what's going on, but you'll enjoy it and want more, just like our podcasts.
It's true. I mean, I don't know what's going on, and I record the damn thing.
And we also have one more here. It's a feature, James.
What? Oh, really?
Yes. It's right up my alley. By Neil Ronahan, what could be next for the Super Mario Amiibo series? So I wanted to just step back for a moment. It's a fantastic feature. Everybody should check it out. But James, what do you think? What should be next for the Super Mario Amiibo series? If I could just pick your brain for a moment.
I'm going to start it off. Alberto Amiibo. It doesn't do anything. But periodically make revisions to its history and occasionally spit out Amiibo eggs that you also have to buy separately.
I think that they should have an amiibo of the actual Birdo eggs.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Those are separate, obviously.
Yeah.
Obviously.
But I think also they should come in different colors for maximum collectability in order to exploit the collectors out there.
Oh, that's almost as bad as Majora revision.
Yeah.
How about a amiibo for every pose that Mario can make in Super Mario Brothers, the original? I mean, it only has about maybe 15, 20 frames of animation. You can crank out 20 amiibos. It'll be fine.
Yep, I think so. I think they should also have a Hyrule Warriors scarf amiibo.
Oh, for the Super Mario franchise?
Well, not for the Super Mario franchise, but I mean
we've expanded the scope of Neil's purview here.
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think, I think
expanding scope here at Radio Free Nintendo.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, we're talking about really what this is talking about is exploitation. So
yeah, I mean, I didn't want to call it that, sure. But I mean, let's just call a spade a spade here.
I mean, let's not beat around the bush. This is now playing, James. People come here for the truth.
It's true.
So definitely, I think a Hyrule Warriors. I mean, I'm sure there's some sort of Mario DLC plan for Hyrule Warriors, so it all works in kind of a roundabout way. So I think they should have a Hyrule Warriors scarf amiibo for maximum to possibly implode the collectability universe.
I mean, if we're going to go ahead and make amiibo for other games in the Super Mario franchise,
Or the Super Mario universe. It's, at this point, it's a universe.
The multiverse, really.
Yeah. True.
I'm going to go ahead and say that we need an amiibo. You got me thinking when I thought about Hyrule Wars. Mm-hmm. I think we need to bring in Tecmo Koei. Because Tecmo Koei is the expert of selling you things in tiny little portions. Mm-hmm. I'll direct you to the Dead or Alive 3, I believe. The one that came out most recently. Mm-hmm. To the DLC shop on your local PlayStation 3 and Xbox 360. Mm-hmm. There are approximately 1,100 items in the DLC shop for that game.
Mm.
I think these are the people that Nintendo really needs to get on board.
I think so.
Because their head's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
I think they come up with a lot of costumes for Mario, a lot of costumes, and especially a lot of costumes for Rosalina. They might be a little bit more stylized than that frock she's normally wearing, but I mean, I think we have some people on staff. I think we could stretch across the breadth of the RFN staff and hit different interests with the same Koei, Tecmo Koei designed Rosalina amiibo. Mm-hmm. I think we could reach broad opinions.
Mm-hmm.
And expanding a market, if it were.
Mm-hmm.
And it shouldn't be. No. But, I mean, as many amiibo as you can possibly make. I mean, you know, when you beat a Dry Bones, he falls to pieces. Why can't each of those pieces be an amiibo?
Valid question.
I mean, they may do the same thing. Maybe they should do the same thing. Maybe they should all. Maybe every amiibo in the Super Mario Brothers amiibo line should do exactly the same thing.
And with that, we will wrap up Now Playing.
That's right, because there's always more content for you to emotionally digest on thereport.com, which, just slow it down for those of you who don't speed here, is nintendoworldreport.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. It is time for our annual predictions debacle.
No.
We're going to predict all the things that won't happen in 2015. And joining us for this very popular annual feature, popular among the audience, not so much the podcast crew here, but we are enlisting the help of our very cheerful and very wise friend, Mr. Chris Kohler. Welcome,
sir.
Hi.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Very, very glad to have you, Chris. It's been a while, I think. I want to say Guillaume was complaining one time that he never seemed to be on the show when you were on the show. So I'm glad we finally got to make that happen. And it has been a while. I don't remember when the last time was, but it feels like
it might have been 2 years ago. I think because when I was searching through my email to find the email thread that we had for going for this thing,
the last time
I had talked to you was, 2 years.
It was about 2 years ago that you were on our PAX panel, I think.
Or maybe three years ago.
Yep. I don't know. I think it was the last one that we did. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it's great to have you back.
Thanks.
And the reason I thought to ask you on this week is because you were mentioning on Twitter that the Game Life podcast studio is being renovated, and so that's why you haven't been able to release a new episode lately. And I thought, well, hey, you could be on our show. And
It's awesome. I'm going through podcast withdrawal. We haven't done the Game Life podcast in a while, and we haven't Good Job Brain, my other podcast. We haven't been able to do that in a little while too. So I'm just like, I got to talk into a microphone and have people listen to me.
Chris, yeah. The plugs go at the end of the episode.
Exactly.
Well, I set him up for it. I set him up.
It's true. It's true.
It's on me.
It's relevant.
But given the way that predictions work, I was mentioning in the break that we don't discuss these ahead of time, so they're always surprises to each other, and it is quite likely that one of us will end up stealing a prediction from someone else on accident, and therefore the polite thing to do would be to allow our guest to go first rather than last. So Chris, what is your first prediction for Nintendo in the year 2015?
Okay, all right. So here's a safe prediction first, just to get it mm-hmm. out there. I was thinking about 2015, and I know people are already starting to chat a little bit about, oh, what is the next Nintendo handheld going to be? What's the next console going to be? I'm going to say forget about it for 2015. Forget about them even talking about it for 2015. I think that this is a safe prediction that Nintendo is not going to start talking up any kind of brand new platform this year at E3 or at any point. expect. Yeah, they may mention, you know, that they're, you know, still working on stuff, but I don't get excited for, like, the 4DS at E3. It's not happening. You know, the 3DS, the new 3DS, rather, is still too new, and the Wii U is still kind of in the middle of its life cycle. But at the same time,
middle might be generous, but
it's not at the very end. It only came out in 2012. They're not going to release a new home console, you know, like next year or the year after, you know, probably, I mean, maybe 2016 if the Wii U really just sort of keeps kind of trudging along and they feel like they need to reinvigorate the market. But I feel like probably 2016 we start to see the next handheld console. Probably 2017 is when we see the new home console. And I definitely think all that we've heard about them kind of working together, kind of like being the iPhone and the iPad, where they kind of share a library and, you know, share an account system and an ecosystem. That all totally makes sense, you know, for the two to kind of be part of the same product line and kind of integrate all that together. You know, it makes sense for Nintendo. So, you know, we'll start to see that. But this year, I think it's just keep trying to continue to sell those Wii U's, and to, you know, get people to buy the new 3DS XL, which has a lot of, there's a lot of reasons why Nintendo wants people to buy that. So that's what we're going to see kind of from them this year.
Seems pretty safe. Yeah. And I think some of the following predictions will get into how they might try to sell the Wii U and the new 3DS XL this year.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I did want to say this might be one that somebody is gonna say, so as the guest again, I get to, you know, go first and steal it. I do think that Nintendo will do the regular sized new 3DS, which they're not releasing at launch next month in the U.S. They're, you know, it's all over the rest of the world, the ones with the swappable faceplates. I think that they will do that in the U.S. I think it will be for Christmas 2015. I think that Nintendo, you know, I think they want to bring it out. It's just not important enough to do it now. The XL, especially in America, is so much more popular than smaller size 3DS. Plus, the whole faceplates thing, you know, having to secure shelf space for the faceplates. Because you have to, like, go to Target. And, like, you have to buy shelf space. You know, you have to actually, like, pay these stores to devote the shelf space, which they just did for Amiibo. It's much more complicated, probably a lot more expensive, I would imagine, in the U.S., where, you know, you approach Target and you have to do it for, you know, every Target in the whole country. I think they want to do the regular size new 3DS. I think they'll probably just sort of put it off until Christmas season. It pushes it into a new financial year, so it kind of juices, you know, the profits that season. It just gives them a year to just kind of spread things out and think about how they're going to launch it. Like, how are they going to launch this thing? What faceplates are they going to launch with? How are they going to market it to people? You know, they can just sort of kick that can down the road. Also, I think that by then, here's another prediction that kind of in this area, we will have more new 3DS exclusive titles by then. I don't think it's going to be kind of Xenoblade Chronicles 3D and then, you know, maybe one or two more. I think we'll start to see, not a critical mass, but, like, there will be, you know, 3, 4, 5, you know, titles that are new 3DS exclusive, you know, package software as well as downloadable they're going to really try to convince people that they have to upgrade to this thing. And so the way you do that is with, like, killer app software. There will be Wii ports. I don't know if they're all going to be Wii ports, but I think that it has been proven a success, you know, getting Monster Games to bring Donkey Kong from the Wii to the 3DS. That game sold a lot at full price on 3DS. Ridiculous, right? So there's some money to be made if they can do that again and again.
Super Mario Galaxy seems like a good candidate for that.
No, because I don't know what you're going to do with the pointer controls. I think that's more of a candidate for release on the Wii U as a download. I think anything that kind of works with a classic controller, or that would at least work with a standard stick and buttons layout, is a good candidate. There's actually, though, there's not a lot of those games out there. Like, if you look at the Wii library, I mean, most things use the pointer. You know, even Punch-Out. Like, you know, Punch-Out just came out. It just came out this week.
But you cannot play that with a classic controller.
You can't play it with a classic controller, and that means you can't play it with the gamepad. It's, you know, it requires the pointer, which means... No, you can... Now, the difference between the Wii games on the Wii U is that it's just the Wii code executing on the Wii U in Wii mode.
Right.
But the Xenoblade Chronicles 3D and Donkey Kong 3D are totally reprogrammed, you know, for the 3DS. So they have the flexibility to tweak, like, you know, if they put Punch Out on the 3DS, I don't know, who knows if they're going to do that. They could, you know, they could make it so it just uses the stick and the button, you know, that sort of thing. But I think we'll see more.
I would say that the fact that Nintendo just put out Punch Out on the Wii U download, I think that just makes it less probable that it's going to be on the new 3DS. Like, I don't think that Xenoblade is going to show up for a while on the Wii U eShop.
Right. If ever. What I think is interesting is that of all of the games, you know, that are coming out, you know, Japan, Europe, the U.S., all the games that are coming out on this Wii game download service. It's all different for every territory, which games they picked for launch, except for Punch-Out. Everybody, even Japan, everybody is getting Punch-Out really early. And I just wonder, like, why it is. Is it a coincidence?
It's got that global appeal.
Yeah, it's the more diverse cast that they have. Yeah,
it has ethnic stereotypes that appeal to every country. I don't know. Is another Punch-Out game coming? Is Punch-Out coming for 3DS? Like, are they trying to revive interest in Punch-Out again? Or is it just a coincidence, and maybe it just so happened that Punch-Out is just one of the games that just works well with, you know, this whatever porting process is going on here? I have no idea. Also, would love to know why it's Mario Galaxy 2 and not Mario Galaxy.
That's why I suggested that maybe the first one is getting reproed for 3DS. But
and yet, if they were to do all the work reproing the first one for 3DS, you'd figure that then it would just be a hop, skip, and a jump to get Galaxy 2 running on 3DS.
Right.
Also,
right.
Nintendo, who knows?
But you would do that later, so maybe by, and I don't know. Anyway, you know, I forgot to recap our predictions from last year.
I was going
to
say.
This is very important. Yes.
Do you want
to? Well, it's okay because Chris didn't have any to recap. So our January 2014, these were the predictions, and I'll try not to laugh as I go through these. So John Lindemann said, Iwata will resign in the year 2014 and possibly commit seppuku.
I was that close.
Obviously not serious, although keep in mind this is coming off the December 2013 MPD sales results.
Yeah, just,
so. Well, now hold on. He did get sick at one point during the year and he did take some time off. So,
does that count?
No,
it doesn't.
I want it to count. I'm
it's
making
not
my
the same
case.
As resigning, but he wasn't active
hey,
the full year.
I'll take what I can get, buddy.
The other, of course, being that Terranigma would be on the Wii U Virtual Console.
Come on.
We wish. But, you know, we did get Demon's Crest, which is pretty close.
Yeah, that's
pretty close. What?
It was.
I think it is. It's a game that's been missing in action for years and years and years.
There you go. Yeah. So I'm 2 for 2. Sweet.
Yes.
Yeah. Let's see. I said there will be a Metroid game announced that will not be what we all want in some nebulous way. It will not make Metroid fans happy. We're still waiting on that one. And then I said E3 will have the new Miyamoto IP, and that will be his so-called last game in a full capacity. And that one, I guess we'll see whether that pans out or not. He certainly did show some things that are potentially new IP. We don't yet know if those will be his sort of last hurrah. Or even that they're IPs.
They may just be things.
Right. They could just be modes
gameplay
and Star
Fox. Concepts.
We'll see. Let's see. Guillaume said there'd be a new Skip game.
Alas.
Not that we know of. That did not happen. And I think at the time that custom Robo thing for 3DS had just come out, which would be the last Skip game that I know of. And then you also predicted – I love this one. You predicted that Mario Golf would evolve into Luigi Golf.
I don't even remember making that prediction. Like, it's on record, presumably, so I'm not going to challenge it. But I don't recall saying that.
Yeah, according to our friend Donald Terrio, that was one of yours. I don't specifically remember that either, but it is charming. And then James said DS retail games would appear on the 3DS eShop from Sega, Capcom, and Square Enix. Still waiting on that one to happen. I think it's still feasible. And then also predicted that X, which we now know is called Xenoblade Chronicles X, would continue to get teased, but does not come out despite it showing up in 4 to 5 Nintendo Directs.
I may have understated how many Nintendo Directs it was going to show up in 2014.
Yeah, and how much walking was going to be involved with those Nintendo Directs.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, I mean, no one thought it was going to come out in 2014. I think you were even, I think you're still a little bit concerned it won't come out in 2015, although I'm pretty sure that it will.
Who knows? But, I mean, we need to see more walking first.
Yeah, but boy, they did show it a bunch of times. They really did. All right, well, that is the recap. You can see the kind of record that we are known for around here. And with that, let's get into our new predictions. And John, why don't you go first?
All right, my first one has to do with the replacement for Club Nintendo. My prediction is the replacement for Club Nintendo will be tied directly into your Nintendo Network account, and it will have both a 3DS and a Wii U app that will let you register amiibos with a tap for credit.
Oh.
See, the way I look at it, it's going to be a devious way to extend the debatable value of amiibos.
Right.
The insidious value of amiibos?
Yes.
That's pretty clever, John.
It's going to stoke the fires. The frenzy will continue.
I don't think each amiibo, unfortunately, is uniquely coded within the actual figure.
That's true. You could just
such
hand them
that
around.
You could, yeah, exactly. I mean, the whole idea is that that's why they had to put that like metal, you know, square in the package, so you couldn't just go to the store and like scan all of the amiibos while they're still in the package, because they're not unique.
I tell you though, they could at least. I mean, the amiibo, of course, will at least tell the system which amiibo it is, which character it is. Mm-hmm. And so you could at least have an app that was looking for at least one instance of every character. So it becomes like a collect them all, and you can actually tell your system that you've collected all of them. And yeah, you could cheat it by using your friend's amiibos, but in a way that's almost like a kind of word of mouth, viral social marketing thing to try to find your friends who have the amiibos that you're missing.
Yeah, I mean, when I find the friend that has a Sonic amiibo, they're not my friend anymore. So that's good to know. That's good information to have.
He's useful in so many ways.
I hope Sonic ends up being part of the Super Mario amiibo line. That'd be pretty rich.
I totally agree with the idea that Nintendo's new customer loyalty program will be something that is sort of really tied in with the Wii and 3DS eShops is more, you know, it's more like a Uplay or something like that, you know, where they just constantly kind of try to like, you know, keep tabs on. I know.
I know. It's invoke its dark name here in the dark tower.
Nintendo Network, it's already built into both of those systems, and you're already, if you own those systems, you have a Nintendo Network account.
Yeah, I think it's going to be like tied more to the Miiverse. In some ways, you know, because it's now both on the 3DS and the Wii U, so there's no reason not to tie the Nintendo to that.
Oh, Uplay. This is turning into a word salad of suffering.
Maybe it'll be called the Amiiverse.
But I mean, I think it is going to be more. I mean, I think physical rewards are over, right? I mean, that's done. So, and now it's a question of, I think, getting, you know, figuring out what games you've purchased and, you know, knowing more about you as a customer in that way, and then incentivizing you with discounts off of more games. And really, A, trying to move people to digital sales, where Nintendo makes more money, and that sort of thing. I think you're totally right that it's going to be much more tied in. Like, even, you know, when you open up, like, the Wii U eShop right now, you can't do anything with Club Nintendo. It's like all handled through a website, and you have to like type in codes. And I think they're just done with that. That was Club Nintendo was the 2003, you know, model of a customer loyalty program, and that's just over now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Guillaume, was that one of your predictions? Were you saying that Amiibo would be tied into Miiverse?
No. Are we getting into my prediction?
Yeah. Well, it is your turn. I might have misheard you.
All right. Well, it does have... anyway, let's get into it. So there have been news that Nintendo did not renew their virtual console trademark for in some way or another. Like I did not go as far as to actually read the articles. I'm, you know, I don't do that kind of research.
Get that out of here.
There's a lot of conversation right now as to what it means. Here's what I think it means. Or what I want it to mean. The virtual console term doesn't really mean anything anymore. Like, it doesn't really make sense to split these, to even talk about the virtual console, because it doesn't really tell you anything. Like, Super Mario 3 is on the virtual console. Well, no, it's not. I just checked on my 3DS and, well, no, the Wii U virtual console. You know, like, it doesn't tell you, it doesn't give you the info that you need. So it's kind of,
it also includes non-console games, like handheld games. You know, Bionic Commando Elite Forces is on virtual console, except that game is not actually a console game.
That's a good point.
It's weird semantic territory for sure.
Yeah.
The service has grown far beyond what Nintendo originally envisioned back before the Wii came out, of course.
Yeah, because like originally they were saying, well, we want to give you the most faithful experience possible. Like, it's going to be like playing these old consoles, but on your Wii. And that's what they said was the reason why you couldn't have like save states and things like that. But a lot of those things have been, you know, have fallen off the wayside, or they have added save states. They don't necessarily offer the best emulation they can nowadays. Like, you can see that the emulation for NES is better in the demos for games in Super Smash Brothers than it is on the actual virtual console. So
good.
You know,
that's what I want to hear.
Yeah. So my prediction is that also, sorry, another element of this, virtual console is probably not very profitable right now because people have bought these games before. Like, they got out the idea, they got out the desire to purchase Super Mario Brothers out of their system like 6 years ago. So, and even the people who are double dipping, they're only paying like $1, so it's not really profitable for Nintendo. So I think that instead, what we're going to see is kind of the emergence of a repackaging of classic games. You know, I think that NES Remix is kind of one way that they went at it. I think we're going to see more of that kind of experimentation. I think we might even see like a line of like new, quote unquote, it could even be like the same logo as the new 3DS, but like new, you know, Kirby. And then you're going to have like the Kirby game, Kirby and Dream Land, but then you can just, I don't know, like purchase a level pack for it, or just stick your Metroid amiibo on your gamepad and play as Samus and Kirby in Dream Land.
Okay.
Yeah. And they could even have like, yeah, just like, you, knowing Nintendo, they could call it like new Kirby and Dream Land, something like that. And then you can go so many places. Like, you add the Mario games again, and you can have just, you know, the levels that they made for the GBA version of Super Mario 3. Like, just add that, but with amiibos or with cards, whatever, you know. And then you could add DS games and have, like, new Super Mario Brothers on there. And then, you know, the new virtual console version of new Super Mario Brothers would be new Super Mario Brothers.
No, that you just opened the darkest. No,
you just crossed the line.
No, I was holding my tongue, but that's too far.
new Super Mario Brothers 8. How's about that, James?
I think that was all a build up to that joke.
That's yeah, basically. But also, you know, in your heart that it's possible. It's possible, and maybe even probable.
I have drank that part of my heart away. Thank you.
All right. Well, I don't think any of my predictions are safe, so I'll just start with this one, which might be actually the craziest of all my predictions, which is that I think towards the end of 2015, we will see a new model of the Wii U that will be cheaper for them to make and will allow them to reduce the price below what they have so far. I think the cost of manufacturing is a big impediment to Nintendo right now with that console, and it's keeping them from making it more competitive. It'll have more internal storage because as we've already discussed, they are moving towards a greater emphasis on digital downloads, and that's more profitable for them. So they're going to make it, you know, I mean, obviously they support hard drives, but that's kind of a more advanced user type approach. So it'll have greater internal storage, and it'll probably launch before or alongside the new Zelda game. So it'll be a way to bring in people who don't already have a Wii U, which is really where their focus is going to have to be if they're going to keep this going for another year or two. So it may not look drastically different, but it will be clear to us at least that it is a new model is basically a way for them to, clean up on some of the manufacturing costs that have held them back over the past 2 or 3 years.
I just don't know. Like, what port can they drop from this revision?
It's just more about using smaller chips and things like that.
Do they have to roll out a new hardware revision, in order to just cost reduce on the system? Like, if they're going to, it's already a super plain black. I'm looking at it right now. I'm like, I'm not really sure what you do with the Wii U to, bring out, a new model, basically. I feel like they would probably just tweak the internals
That's what I mean. But it's like when Microsoft did the Falcon 360s or whatever they were called. I mean, They didn't say that on the box, but if you were following this stuff, you knew that those had new components that were supposed to be less likely to melt down when you ran.
You could also shrink the gamepad to a degree too. Probably make it more streamlined.
I think you definitely could. I'm sure it's pretty chunky. Could save some money on the gamepad, frankly, because that thing, it feels like that the gamepad technology. I mean, not that the streaming gameplay is still, I think, kind of futuristic and cool, but the actual device that you hold in your hands, it feels like it's even older than it actually is. It feels like a 5-year-old thing. It just doesn't. It doesn't really look new, and I think it would do them a lot of good. But that may be a whole separate development effort that I don't know if they're going to get into.
I mean, it looks like a thing from the dark timeline that Guillaume was painting in the previous prediction.
the darkness. So.
If hardware design had gone in a really strange way, this is what you end up with.
Yeah. All right. Well, James, what is your prediction? Your first prediction?
Yeah, I'm chewing a little bit on which one to go with. So I'm going to go back to the well again. So when I predicted that DS games would show up, I predicted they somehow managed to trick the hardware into letting it sort of launch without having to do too much eShop work to make it happen. At some point, I retconned Wii on the Wii U into that, and that sort of happened, kind of, so we're getting there. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I still think that maybe it'll be a new 3DS thing, but I still think that they're going to find a way to get DS games on the eShop without having to do much work to them.
So you're just repeating last year's prediction.
Well, no, because I think it still makes sense.
It does, and they should do it.
And they've already kind of done it with that weird thing in Japan with the Advance Wars game, but it's a little bit different. I feel like that.
Inazuma 11 here.
That's actually a Wii. That's actually a 3DS release, isn't it?
I don't even know. It's not 3D, that's for sure.
Yeah. I think they're going to attempt to put these things on the eShop because ultimately there are a ton of DS games, and getting them on there should be fairly easy.
Yeah, I think that if this happens, it would be a new 3DS only thing because if they were able to do it on the regular 3DS, they would have done it, but I don't think they can.
Yeah.
As evidenced by the fact that instead of even releasing, they didn't even release Game Boy Advance games on the early 3DS. They put them on Wii U and DS games, which is not out in America yet, but Brain Age, you can buy that or play it or for free,
which is,
or whatever,
bizarre.
It was on the Wii U. Well, it makes sense. I mean, it's easier to get a much more powerful piece of hardware emulating essentially those games. But you're right. I mean, there is a lot of money to be made there potentially. Especially to go to tell third parties, remember all these games you released? Press a button and you can start selling them again. And yet, every year that goes by and they don't do it, the amount of money they can make off of it lessens because third parties, even looking at their library of DS games, are going to go, is it even worth the effort? Are people even buying games on 3DS in America? Are the people want Gardening Mama 2, Garden Harder? Like, do they want to buy this game even now, even if we put it out there for them? Is it worth the effort?
I tell you what they want is Radiant Historia and Final Fantasy IV. And I mean, that, I think there's a lot of 3D of DS third party games that people want. People want Henry Hatsworth these maybe cult games, but they're games that appeal to exactly the kind of person who would want to download a DS game onto a 3DS.
And the other pro there being obviously that the if this this should be easy enough that the cost to do it is relatively low. That there it's such right. a low barrier to entry and it's digital only sale. It should be a fairly simple thing to turn money around on if it's worth the effort to even go through the promotion process, the lot check stuff, and get that done.
Chris, we discussed this a little bit last week with the Wii games running on Wii U, but maybe you can help shed some light on this. With games being this modern, this recent, being sort of re-released on a newer platform, do you think you can circumvent some of the costs associated with ESRB ratings and stuff like that? I mean, could it be even cheaper and easier to release a more recent game through a service like this than it is, say, an NES game where you have to go back and hunt down all the license holders and make a cut a video and send it to ESRB and pay them a fee for a game they've never seen before?
That's a really interesting question. I don't know. I don't know if those games have to be re-rated or not. Not sure.
We weren't sure either.
Not sure. You may want to check in with the ESRB and see what they have to say about it.
Yeah, that would require me to do actual reporting,
right?
Which I'm
right.
supposed to be retired from.
Right, of course.
All right. Well, let's go back around. And Chris, do you have any other predictions, or did you
blast them all out? Let's see. Yeah, okay. So here's a prediction. I predict that after 3 years of losing money, Nintendo will announce in, April that it did, in fact, by some accounting method or another, it will report that it was in the black, for the last fiscal year, and that the staunched the bleeding, temporarily. And then I predict that 3 months later, when they announce the first quarter results for the next fiscal year, that they will lose money again. and not to say they're gonna lose money for the whole year, but juiced by Smash Brothers and Amiibos, Nintendo will have had a good holiday season. Good enough to also the launch, the worldwide launch of the XL, and it will be enough cash coming in to boost them for the fiscal year, so they can go to investors and say, hey, look, we're actually making money again. But then they're going to lose money because I don't think that Smash and the 3DS XL are going to provide sort of a long-term boost to their finances. And when we get back into April, May, June, and there's no real games coming out that are kind of like mass appeal, and it's their dead time anyway, because it's so far away from the holiday season, it's far away from summer, kids are still in school, there's no major holidays. They're gonna lose money again. Because the stuff they're doing now is like band-aids, it's helping them along, it's keeping the Wii U going, but it's not a big effort that's going to turn the ship around and get everything back to order again. So that those are my predictions for money wise.
Actually, look, I have a question for you. I'm going to ask you to even further predict on this topic.
Okay.
Do you think the Wii U will perform better in 2015 than it did in 2014, or has it already peaked?
I think that this is tough. This is tough. As peaks go,
2014 is not the most amazing peak for console sales, but certainly was a big improvement over 2013.
I gotta think about it. I'm gonna be bold, and I'm gonna say that in the United States, Wii U just had its best year, and that 2015 calendar year will see a decline, a slight decline in sales of Wii U because Mario Kart and Smash Brothers were the two big cards. Those cards have been played, and for as excited as we may be about them, Xenoblade and The Legend of Zelda and even Mario Maker are not Smash Brothers and Mario Kart. And I could be totally wrong. There could be a huge price drop. I don't think there will be. I think there will be a price drop. I don't think it will be something that is like so monumental to make it go up. So I will say 2014, that was the peak.
I think you might be right, but if that's so, then we might actually see the next console in 2016. Because if 2014 was as good as it gets for Wii U, Nintendo really cannot be satisfied with that. I mean, that's going to be – they're going to have to take drastic measures.
2016, I mean, you know what? We were all there in 2005 for the GameCube. We were all there. True. We were.
I just don't want to go through it again.
We all played Odama. Okay.
Hey, you remember that Endless Ocean game? Here's another Endless Ocean game. Have fun.
We all played Geist. Jeez. You know, it was a tough year, and that is what I think that Wii U's 2016 is going to be. I think Wii U's 2016 is going to be the year of Odama and Geist, and just get me through the next console. But Udama. I don't think
that was also the year of Chibi Robo, though.
It was the year of Chibi Robo.
Yeah, it was so not all dark.
Wonderful, wonderful bright spot, which of course they never would have released if they didn't have such a huge gaping sort of hole between.
If they weren't desperate.
But I think that 2016 is going to be the year of slogs, and I do think that Zelda has a really high chance of getting delayed into 2016.
Of course, it does.
Yeah. Did I step on somebody's prediction?
Well, it's just the go-to prediction. They've announced...
It's more of an unspoken prediction.
They've announced
a
Zelda game.
Yeah,
it's going to get delayed.
Yep.
Right.
Well, it didn't really look like it was... I mean, what they've showed so far...
They showed grass and a dude on a horse. I mean...
Yeah, it didn't look anywhere near a complete game at all. It looked like the very beginnings of a tech demo.
They've been very
and
selective.
It might be really far along, and they just might be really holding back on what it is they're showing, so they can kind of drip it out.
Right.
But that's about where they got a horse. They got a horse riding around, and then they got to just fill.
All right, guys, we've made grass. Right. What can we do with this demo?
We'll see. And I do think
again,
probably
right. The really important thing about Zelda. I mean, you know, this is. And if anything goes wrong, they're probably operating right now in this sort of just razor thin edge of if we do everything perfectly and it all comes out perfectly, then Zelda will come out this year. But if like anything goes wrong, you know, they might get bumped to 2016. And the problem is, Nintendo has never done a Skyrim open world game before. It's never done it. And I mean, this is the Nintendo that just, you know, got, you know, not a couple of years ago, were just like, wow, it sure is hard to make high definition video games. Who would have known that? And then had to delay everything out, you know, way past where they wanted it to be. So it's like they kind of, you know, I think that EAD and Nintendo, I think they're so siloed away from the rest of the universe that like they overestimate their abilities, you know what I mean? Like to make any sort of video game and underestimate just how hard it is for other people to make it. You know, I think they look at Skyrim, and if they were to look at Skyrim and tell you how hard they think that game was to make, they'd probably undershoot it, you know, because...
Right.
Miyamoto once
said he could make Halo, sort of. That's
right,
out of context.
I could make Halo. It's like... way to just completely dismiss all of the institutional knowledge, all of the work that goes into making it, and just say, yeah, I could do that. It's like, oh, man. And it's like, you know, I'm sure they actually, you know what, Mr. Miyamoto, I'm sure that you and your team could actually make a great first-person shooter, but, like, it's just so, like, it's, and now they're trying, and now they're trying to make, you know, this big open-world game, but it's like, if something goes wrong, and if you've not estimated correctly on the amount of work and people and, you know, the debugging and all of the testing and all of the, everything that it's going to take to make this thing work, you're going to have to delay the game. It just seems like they're operating on this very thin margin.
Well, not only that, they have two arms of the company making two big open world games right now for Wii U because they've got Monolith out making Xenoblade X.
Which that has a release date. You know, that,
it does.
I mean,
it does.
They said, we're bringing this out. So I think that's...
Yeah, but I mean, it's like, there's got to be some shared resource pool that they're hitting at somewhere going like, hey, like even in their debug teams, at some point...
I do think Monolith will end up getting co-developer credit on Zelda, though. I think,
once
X is wrapped up, they're going to go in and sort of be the cleanup team on Zelda.
Well, I mean, we talked... They've probably developed some middleware for... Wii U development that is being used. I mean, because they did on Wii, they had a ton of stuff that they made that other parts of Nintendo used.
That is the effective rejoinder to my argument of, do these people know what they're doing? Nintendo, in the last little while, has been very aggressive about going. I mean, they had Bandai Namco make Smash Brothers, right? I mean, like, yep. Who knows who's actually making Zelda? Maybe Capcom's making it. You know, maybe Nintendo actually
Capcom
went out.
Used to make Zelda. They don't Smash anymore. Bros.
Yeah, and like found
Capcom used to make games.
Development partner that's like, we have the knowledge to walk you through this. We're going to do all the heavy lifting of the HD worlds and environments and things like that for you. I mean, even when you look at, you know, like Brownie Brown working on Mario 3D World, they're really kind of going out there and finding other studios and bringing in more teams of people to, you know, retro doing Mario Kart. Like, that's a big change. And that is one of the things that makes me think that maybe they've really got their ducks in a row. Like, this is really going to happen.
I mean, Monster is basically Retro's development, like, side team. Like, hey, we need seven devs to make levels for us. Hey, is Monster available? Great. Get on it. I mean, the only reason I can imagine they even bought Monolith was just for development resources and tech support and, you know, getting technology and design ideas from these people. Because, I mean, what had they made? They had made a Baten Kaitos game, and then before that they had made the Xeno Saga games, which are really outside their wheelhouse.
And they had some people with a lot of experience at Square before that. So,
sure. Yeah, but I mean, it's not like they were like, "Oh, that's an obvious fit for us to buy to buy that."
No, that was what. That's why we were so excited back in 2004, 2005.
What the hell just happened?
So they seemed so complimentary to Nintendo's capabilities.
And then they made Disaster.
Yeah, and then disaster struck.
All right. Yeah. Well, let's move on with John's next prediction.
All right. This one's kind of goes back to, you know, what cards does Nintendo have left to play. I really have a feeling that you're going to see a new Metroid Prime game announced at E3 with a totally new story arc for Wii U.
If you just keep saying it, John.
Yeah. I know. I feel like I say that. I say that year after year.
It's your turn this year.
The thing is, to Chris's point, they're running out of cards to play. I mean, because obviously the only thing that people are really going to care about beyond the Nintendo diehards are going to be those big franchises, right? They're going to be the Mario Karts and that kind of stuff. So the kind of stuff that is that elevated outside of the Nintendo, you know, hardcore is Metroid, and that's something.
Is Metroid?
Every time Metroid Prime game comes out, it gets buzz outside of the Nintendo sphere. It does because they're always really, really good.
I think that and one of my predictions that I had written down was a little bit more vague, but it was that 2015 is the year that we find out what is going on with Metroid, like there's got to be some game in development. Is it Metroid Prime on the Wii? Is it Metroid Wii U? Is it Metroid the follow on to the Metroid Other M? Are they having Team Ninja make another game on the Wii U?
Oh, come on,
unlikely.
Oh, I hope so.
A riot breaks out on the podcast.
Or is Metroid showing up on the 3DS? You know, is it a follow-on to Metroid Fusion on the 3DS? Right. Who knows? I think there's probably only one Metroid in development. It's not a Metroid Prime Fusion situation where they're both consoles are happening. So I'm sure that Nintendo has made a decision as to what is the next Metroid game. I'm sure it's in development. So the question is, we're not going to get it in 2015, but we'll probably find out what it is and see what of the many different directions they could go in. Mm-hmm. I think that having Retro, you know, now that they've like forced Retro, you know, to make another Donkey Kong game on the Wii U, and that's out and it's been out for a while, they can maybe do another Metroid Prime. But I totally agree that, yeah, if they do another Metroid Prime, reboot or at least, you know, just sort of break free of the shackles of the Wii games. I'm excited that Metroid Prime Trilogy is coming out for $10 for the Wii U, because that's great. You know, good to not have people have to go and pay like $50 for a disc and getting three games for $10, three of these amazing games.
I was originally going to predict maybe that it would be a new 3DS XL exclusive, but I don't think so, because I think it could help Wii U more than it could help 3DS.
Yeah.
In any way, shape, or form.
Agreed.
Yeah, I wonder if they might maybe do that, like do a Metroid Prime for the new 3DS XL. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, again, like the new 3DS or the new 3DS, like they've, as you said, they've had monster games learning the ins and outs of how to program on that thing. So maybe there's a sort of a Monster Games retro EAD or SPD rather, you know, Metroid first person 3DS XL type thing happening. Who knows?
Honestly, yeah. those game, I mean, that game would look incredible in 3D.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that I want them to make yet another, you know, sort of enhanced version of Metroid Prime, but it is one of their most acclaimed games of all time, and I think it would be extremely well suited to the focus on the 3D effect on the new system.
Have you guys played a first person shooter on a 3DS?
Moon Chronicles Episode 1 is the only one, really. Yeah,
what
and it looks good. It looks
that?
Really good. It's a DS game, so it's not the sharpest. I think it looks really cool.
But it has 3D output?
Yeah. Yeah, and it runs at 60 frames per second.
Okay.
So it's not graphically impressive because it's like a 5-year-old game that they've upported to 3DS. But the 3D combined with the frame rate, I think, is nice. It works well.
Yeah, I'm just
well.
Curious about the first person perspective, first person shooter, fast action, coupled with stereoscopic 3D effect. Like, does it make you want to vomit, or does it look awesome?
But I don't know, like, weren't the Killzone, like, Sony, like, surely Sony fans have the answer to that. Like, surely Killzone and whatever Sony has
Team Fortress 2 and an Oculus Rift, and that's 3D. That's the most 3D. So, you know, it's been done. It's still kind of a new frontier, but it wouldn't be the first time it's ever been done. I think it could work really well, especially Metroid Prime is not, like, a super fast-paced game either.
Yeah.
But, anyway, let's move on to Guillaume's next prediction.
Do I even dare? You guys are not going to like this.
Yes, you dare.
We dare.
So, Nintendo likes to kind of reintroduce old franchises, like in 2D, with like a new art style or a new, like, you know, like the way, like with Epic Yarn, like that took everyone by surprise. And that was like, a new Kirby game, except now he's made of yarn and it's super cute and, you know, at E3, people loved it. And, you know, soon we're going to have Yoshi, and, like, instead of just yarn, you've got these knit Yoshis, and it's pretty cool. And, of course, like, back in the day, Yoshi's Island had the crayon art style, and, you know, all kind of really cool and successful experiments that they've done. So I think that for the next franchise, like, what's the next logical step? You know, what's the next kind of arts and crafts?
Impressionism.
No, more like arts and crafts, like material that they could use, and that's
cubism.
When
I'm just imagining a cubist Muramasa.
No, more. You know, like what kids do, and that's when it struck me, glitter. So they're going to use a glitter art style, and what is a franchise that they haven't trotted out in a while? Well, unfortunately, we just talked about it. Metroid
so, glitter.
Glitter Metroid.
Yep. So, you know, like, because it just almost makes too much sense, you know, because
that's exactly what I was thinking, Guillaume. It almost makes too much sense.
Yeah,
well, you see, like, Samus is, like, the only Nintendo, like, female character, or, like, one of the very few that's not, like, a princess.
Oh, here we go.
It just gets worse the more you keep talking.
Send emails to.
Nintendo is trying to draw, like, more of a female audience to the Wii U because, you know, like, they really managed to capture that market with the DS and the Wii, but not so much today. So, and what do little girls love more than sparkles, you know, than
are
glitter?
Are you really suggesting a Metroid Lisa Frank edition? Is that where we're at right now?
Well, you know, like, the kids, little girls love glitter, and then, like, they grow up, and what do they like? They like sparkly vampires? What's a Metroid? What is a Metroid? That's right. It's a type of vampire.
I can't even.
And to finish this off, like, I've even got, like, Nintendo loves alliteration, so I've even got the title. Sparkle Samus and the Glitter Gun.
Oh my god.
Coming to your Wii U in 2015.
Bless your heart.
Yeah.
you really put some thought into that.
Wow. I went way too deep. I want this game now. I want it.
I might be having a stroke.
All right. Well, the good thing is there's not too much to discuss there. So we can hurry up and move on. My next prediction is that Platinum Games is working on a classic Nintendo franchise, and we'll at least learn about it this year. I think this makes a lot of sense with the Bayonetta 2 deal, and Platinum is a kind of a work for hire type studio. You know, they made Metal Gear for Konami, they made the Legend of Korra game recently, which I heard was not that good. But they're out there looking for work, and they're one of the few legitimate third party developers in Japan who really do work with a lot of different publishers. And they have now worked with Nintendo, but on a franchise that they made for Sega, and Sega kind of co-published that game on
Wii U.
And
they also worked on Wonderful 101.
Yes, true. But I think, you know, Nintendo's new kind of style of getting other developers to, and they've already talked about this, I think the most likely candidate would be Star Fox. And it could be that they're already working on the Star Fox game. And it seems like the kind of thing that Platinum could turn around. And I think it fits their sort of their style and their approach. And it's something that it could feel like a Star Fox game, but also feel like a Platinum game. And that would appeal to their studio. And I think it would be something Nintendo would feel like a company like Platinum could sort of refresh their franchise and make it cool again, which Star Fox has really not been in a very long time. So it could be other – I don't want to say definitely Star Fox, but I think that's the most likely candidate. But I do think you'll see another Platinum game with Nintendo,
I think that is unlikely. I think that the fact that Nintendo has already introduced Star Fox as this sort of Miyamoto project, it's not going to be Miyamoto x Platinum Games. Like they're gonna find a developer, you know, they've probably already found a, you know, developer, and they're working on finishing up Star Fox, but it's not gonna be attaching Platinum Games to it. But I do absolutely agree that like Platinum Games is one of that list of, you know, developers that Nintendo is very clearly interested in kind of, you know, building these relationships out with. And so seeing Platinum Games take on a classic Nintendo franchise might actually happen. I don't know, maybe it's Metroid, but I think that Team Ninja probably still wants Metroid. What's Team Ninja even doing? They're not doing anything.
Yeah, after Other M, I'm not sure Nintendo would want to work with them again.
It's not. Well, no, I mean, that has nothing to do with it. The critical reception of the game has absolutely nothing.
No,
to do with
it's the sales that it's the sales that are damning.
Yeah,
not
but
the critical
still,
reception.
Yeah, but none of that. It, what matters is the relationship, and Nintendo's and Tecmo Koei's relationship is, if anything, strengthening because
it's
Hyrule Warriors. They're gonna keep going.
That game sold a ton of copies, and it was regarded as a really good Musou game, which for people who don't really like Musou games. And also, they bought a license off Tecmo Koei just last year. They bought the
Fatal Frame.
And they're still making a Fatal Frame game for Nintendo.
That's true.
In the process of making right now.
Yeah.
And Tecmo Koei needs that cash, yo.
Again,
they can't put out games with 900 pieces of DLC every month.
Yeah, I gotta say. Oh, and Team Ninja also worked on Hyrule Warriors also.
Yep.
Yeah, them
the I guess the next game they have coming up is Dead or Alive 5 Last Round for PS3, PS4, Xbox 360, and Xbox One.
Yep. Huh. But seriously,
we're all looking forward to that.
I hate to be that guy who brings the party down, but like of Metroid on the 3DS versus Metroid Prime on the Wii U versus Team Ninja makes another Metroid game, I feel like the actual, like, most likely one is Team Ninja gets another crack at Metroid just because of the closeness of the relationship that's who they go with out of that loyalty.
Wow, Glitter Samus was not even, like, in consideration there.
Yeah, that's a distant fourth, most likely. But yep. I honestly, I wouldn't be that disheartened.
Oh, excuse me, behind Glitter. Yeah, behind Glitter. Yeah.
Thank you.
I wouldn't be that disheartened by another Team Ninja collaboration on Metroid. I don't think Team Ninja was the problem with Other M. I think Nintendo's producer was the main problem with that game.
The problem was a little closer to home, you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I think it's pretty clear actually when you play the game, but regardless,
I mean, that's the way that the orders flowed from Nintendo to Team Ninja. So it wasn't
right. Okay, well, James, what is your next prediction? And after that, we'll go to a lightning round to wrap up quickly with any that we have left.
All right, so right now we know for a fact there are people still working on developing Super Smash Brothers for Wii U. Because we know A, there's that Mewtwo DLC coming, but also there's the tournament mode stuff they've talked about.
Yeah.
There's level sharing.
Yeah.
So that team that made that game still exists right now, or at least some component of it does. My prediction is that that team is not just doing those things, that they are producing promotional level DLC for Smash Brothers to come out alongside major Nintendo releases, or at least over the course of the next year, to promote that content. So Splatoon's coming out. Maybe there's a Splatoon themed level.
So okay, along the lines of the Woolly World
would be hard
stage,
right?
That's already in there.
Raising to a character might be more difficult, but they could potentially go that far. But a stage, perhaps, because that game feels light on stages.
Yeah,
and maybe that's pay. Maybe you get it when you buy the game digitally. Buy their game digitally, their upcoming one. Maybe you get it for free to promote the game, kind of like a puzzle pieces. I mean, they. Depending on how much they invest in the individual piece of DLC, it gives them the flexibility to do that. And they could do that for 4 or 5 releases this year, depending on how big and small a thing is. Imagine if when the new Zelda comes out, or like a month before the new Zelda comes out, there's a stage based on it. It takes place in that world.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I mean, just in the general sense of Nintendo has woken up and discovered downloadable content, and not just like little bits of downloadable content, but like, you know, they can sell you a game for a year, you know, if by just put big chunks of downloadable content. You know, we're seeing it with Mario Kart, Smash Brothers. I can only imagine that they have like a ridiculous DLC plan, that you're absolutely right, that like that team is still hard at work. Lots of new characters, lots of new stages, and the fact that they haven't started selling any DLC yet. I bet you anything, based on what happened with Mario Kart, they will do a season pass for Smash Brothers, where they will get a bunch of money from you up front, tons of characters, and just tell you, oh, you know, you pay us all this free money, then we will, you know, you'll be the first to get the new stages and the first to get the new characters by whatever and all that kind of stuff. So, yeah, totally. I don't know if they necessarily tie it to game releases in that sort of exacting way, but I think 2015 is the year of Smash Brothers DLC. We will see DLC releases all this year, even in the holiday season, we will still be seeing character stages.
I think the lesson they probably took away from Mario Kart is it doesn't pay to do a small thing, like a small piece of DLC. You've got to do something. You've got to make an announcement that'll get headlines on across the spectrum of outlets that cover the stuff.
You don't want the horse armor. You don't want the horse armor. You want the Shivering Isles. You want the Shivering Isles. You want the full, the whole thing.
I mean, Iwata's gone on in the past about, you know, how he wants to put out things of value, right? So I think this is kind of, even though it's like they've shied away from DLC in the past, it's like I think they've finally come around and realized that, hey, you can actually add additional value by adding DLC. You're not necessarily just always screwing people over with DLC. So
Yep. Agreed. Okay, well, that is going to be the bulk of our predictions. Let's go around one more time for a lightning round. Real quick, one or two that you might have left. Chris, you're up first.
Get ready to hear all about Nintendo's Quality of Life Initiative, which will be a little machine that you put next to your bed, and it monitors how you're sleeping, and it tells you that you have sleep apnea and that you're fat and you have to exercise more. Get ready to hear about this all year. You have to write your stories about it, because it's coming. It's coming, you guys.
Chris Kohler is a paid spokesman of Nintendo of America.
I already did.
I don't think we're
going to
cover it that
story
much, because we're a video game podcast, and I just kind of don't care that much.
Hey, I wrote like 4,000 words of copy. I don't need it.
It's gonna be the new Metroid is the Quality of Life thing. It's a Chozo statue that's sitting next to your bed and it tells you you're fat.
It's just me like that.
It spits out glitter when you've slept enough hours.
It's just really creepy. You actually roll up into a ball and just curl up right in this little right under its beak.
Yep.
All right. Okay, John. My prediction is Nintendo will announce a series of tournaments that are leading up to a Splatoon World Championship. Because they've kind of gone into this. They've kind of sponsored some Smash tournaments. And, you know, they kind of want to push that area of these games, I think. And Splatoon, since it's going to be kind of their flagship first-person shooter-ish game, I think they're going to promote it more than they would. They're not just going to put it out there to die. They're going to promote it a little bit with tournaments and stuff like that, World Championships.
Do some actual community management with it.
Yep.
Cool. All right, Guillaume.
Are you kidding? I blew my load already.
Okay. That's perfectly fine.
My last one is that I think there will be another Zombie U game for Wii U coming out this Halloween, but it will be multi-platform. I think they're, I think they probably have done a lot of work on it already. It might be that game that Yves Guillemot talked about being basically finished and they were waiting. And I think in the interim, while they wait for Wii U to kind of build up to a larger install base, they're probably porting it to other systems as well. And I think that will be the last significant Ubisoft game for Nintendo consoles.
So when you say it's multi-platform, you mean it includes the Wii U?
Yes, yes.
Because now we have to make that precision.
Yeah, yeah, fair enough. Yeah. That's it. And James?
So I know we talked earlier about the possibility of Wii games being released on the new 3DS. In fact, we've seen it. I think what we're going to see potentially a bigger glut of is the possibility of GameCube games being released on the new 3DS, because you don't have to worry about mapping the controls. And conceivably, it might even be easier. And there's quite a few GameCube games that haven't seen the light of day in almost 10 years at this point. I mean, imagine, how much would you pay right now for a 3D remake of F-Zero GX right now? I feel like there's
$10.
Thank you, John. Thank you for that.
Market research right there, James.
I feel like there's a prospect that they could make those, even turn those around a little bit easier. I mean, they're already in the business of remaking N64 games as long as Zelda's in the front of the name. I mean, at some point, it seems like they're comfortable farming these out to like Gretzo, companies that aren't inside Nintendo to make these things. So they could continue to process these things onto the new 3DS to provide exclusive content for a platform that is in dire need of it.
Yeah, I'll agree with you at least on one GameCube game, because I, although maybe better preserved as a Wii game, I think Twilight Princess is the next 3D Zelda remake, and probably coming 2016. But I think that will be the follow up to Majora's Mask.
Oh, and Ocarina of Time. Yeah, you know, that's interesting. Okay, I like this. I like this Twilight Princess on the 3DS. Maybe a new.
It kind of merges
exclusive.
Two different trends that Nintendo's been following.
Yeah, I kind of like that. I kind of like that. And I agree. I think GameCube is like a richer sort of vein to tap for new 3DS exclusives.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's wrapping up our prediction segment. It went pretty long, but hey, you got five people here, a lot of dumb ideas to throw out on the table. But it sure was fun. And Chris, we really do appreciate you jumping in here. It was a lot more fun with you joining in the fray as we debate these crazy ideas that we have every year. So thanks, everyone, for listening. You can send your emails for next episode to rfn@NintendoWorldReport. You can follow us on Twitter at @RFNPodcast. And you can follow Chris at @KobunHeat. And Chris, what else would you like to plug before we go?
Yes, that's KobunHeat. That's the Twitter handle. I didn't really think too hard when I picked it out. It's not easy to say on a podcast. I want to plug some things. We do a podcast at Wired. That's where I work, Wired. We're on a brief hiatus, as you kind of mentioned, but definitely check it out at wired.com and then go, and then maybe it's somewhere around there. It's called the Game Life Podcast. It's on iTunes.
Great, by the way. I highly recommend it. And it's one of the few multi-platform podcasts where Nintendo is actually one of the main topics. I feel like almost every week you talk about Nintendo. You can't say that for a lot of other multi-platform video game podcasts. Okay. I definitely want to recommend it to our listeners.
And I definitely want to plug several other things. How much time do you have? I want to talk about Good Job Brain, which is a non-video game trivia slash a pub quiz slash weird stories about things podcast that I do with some friends of mine. Hit goodjobbrain.com if you want to hear me talk about not video games. Anything from boogers to... weird historical facts or
whole birds that are cooked in incredibly inhumane
conditions. Exactly. All that kind of funny stuff. Goodjobbrain.com. And also, if you are into video game collecting like me, I have a regular column that appears in every issue of Retro Magazine. ReadRetro.com is where you can go to like subscribe to that or buy an issue. I have no idea. And I just basically break down one console every month and talk about the collecting scene and what the rarest games are and how to not get scammed by fakes and all kinds of stuff like that. I love collecting video games, so I like talking about it in that venue.
Really cool. And what if I'm super interested in collecting video game scarves?
Well, scarves or scarves?
Scarves?
Well, scarves I've got. I've got plenty of those.
They go hand in hand.
Scarf? If you're, well, if you're one of 300 lucky people in America, you get the Hyrule Warriors limited edition, or you just sit and think about how it would be nice to live in any country other than this one.
Yeah, as you do. Love it or leave it.
I'm teasing you a little bit there, because I know you were one of the people who were fairly upset about how that whole thing
totally,
was rolled out.
Totally. I had a friend who works in Rockefeller Center, and I said, oh, can you, you know, they're going to sell this Hyrule Warriors limited edition. It's only there. Can you just swing by before work and get me one? He's like, oh, yeah, sure. He gets there at 7 a.m., and the line is just like, oh, yeah, the line filled up at 3 a.m., and that's as many as they had. For the whole country, for the entire country of the United States of America, they made 300. This is water under the bridge.
Sure it is.
I was recently at the Redmond Nintendo of America headquarters company store, and they said basically the same thing happened there. Even their own employees and family members of employees who have access to that store, they were lined up hours before the store opened in the morning, and they sold out of them almost immediately. So even within Nintendo's own storied halls, it was extremely difficult to get one of those
things. Well, yeah. Well, with that happening, we should have seen Amiibos coming a mile away.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, thanks everyone for listening. Thanks again, Chris, for being our special guest this week. And we'll hope to have you back on sooner rather than later. Thanks everyone for listening. We'll be back next time.
Bye.
Later.